Join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Carissa, would you please call the roll?
Bill Cooper?
Here.
Jeff Jones?
He's excused.
Bob McGinnis?
Here.
Paul Penny?
Here.
Linda Rich?
Here.
Sharon Tobias?
Here.
Dan Crosby?
Here.
Dave Hicks?
Here.
Tom Schneider?
Here.
And the meeting is being recorded for those of you that are new with us.
Okay.
And for the two new members, welcome again, and I want to ensure that everybody knows everybody. Got it.
Well, we know each other's names.
Yeah. Well, at least that much, anyway. Yeah. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Andy, for bringing that up. There is no public, so we don't have to worry about discussion matters not on the agenda. Sharon, you're up.
Okay, so you have the May financials. Although still, I'm looking at the income and expense statement. Never mind. I guess it's up. So there's two sets. There's a accrual-based accounting. This is for the new people, the new members. So the first page is just what we have in the bank as of May 31st. And then our assets, and then our liabilities as well. So it's just basically accounting for the company. The second page is our income and expense statement, and that, again, is for May. I did look at the June numbers, or Trisha gave me expenses from June 1st to July 9th, and if you look at this statement, it says that we've spent in May, as of May, we've spent 32% of expenses that we budgeted for have been incurred. And as of July 9th, we've incurred 39% of our expenses. And that's for the whole year. That's for 2019. So, and we're halfway through the year at this point. So
Sharon, quick question. Look at fixed assets, land year over year, May versus May, there's a $205,000 difference. Why did our land...
I don't know why.
Yeah, how did the land go down?
Did we lose... I don't know. I would have to ask Lee, unless Tom has an idea.
I don't.
I'm sorry. I can ask Lee when she's back. I have several questions for Lee, but I can put that on the list because that's a good point.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense.
You know, let me find out the answer and we'll respond. We'll have Lee send out a response or I'll send out a response. I don't think I can communicate with everybody, but we'll get the response out there to you all. So.
Okay.
Just one comment. One big reason that we're underspending compared to where we are in the year is the one line item on interest with CoBank. You know, there's 250 budgeted there. We're only at about 36K. So the interest, based on the fact that the charging is down from what was planned, we haven't spent as much on interest on our interim loan.
So that was intentional on our part. I mean, literally, in the fact that we've chose not to draw money out.
That's correct. But yeah. That's fine. And I had told Lee, you know, when the budgets came out that I thought this was pretty far overstated for the amount of interest that we're going to pay this year. But that kind of skews it a little bit.
So do we think Mozingo is behind in their billing?
I'm not sure exactly what
they're behind in our estimate that we had from MC estimated it, that they'd be farther along in the billing. but I think a lot of that is the winter that they had. We had a long winter with a lot of rain, so we couldn't work. So I think that slowed it down a little bit. That's probably why they're...
The last bill we received was in June through May, and, you know, based on, if I look at it, including their retainage, I think he mentioned they were about 40% complete at the June meeting, and they're 39% spent, so it's pretty close.
But, so as far as you can tell, they're not in arrears when it comes to billing?
No. Okay. Well, I expect that we would have received another bill by now for June, but I haven't, you know, with Lee out, you know, Chris, if we've received.
I don't know.
They're working on the next progress payment. Yeah. I don't know how much it is.
Yeah. I did pay them in June, but I don't know what that was for.
That was for the May billing, probably.
Okay,
Yeah.
In July, excuse me, I paid them at the beginning of July.
Oh, you did?
So it could have been, it would have been on, Sharon, did you see that on that sheet, the bank register that I sent you?
All right, on June 27th, we paid them $459,115.27. So, but I haven't seen any progress payment requests from them. So.
Was that payment?
I guess.
Was that for progress payment 9? Do you know? That was
it doesn't
one.
Say. I
yeah.
think so.
That was the last one I saw.
Yeah, I think that's the same one.
Well, the thing about the financials being roughly 40% or 39% versus, you know, the project completion, part of that initial financial was materials.
Right.
So if I just think about taking the materials out of the progress billing, it would seem as though they're behind.
It would, yeah. Yeah, because that was a considerable amount for the materials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, $1 million, if I recall.
Yeah.
In that vicinity. So I don't know what that means, but as we look at the numbers and try to keep things in perspective.
So where is this line item about the $200,000 that we haven't drawn from CoBank? I don't see that on here. I'm missing something.
Oh, it's not from CoBank. It's, I believe, on the first page it has under assets for land.
Yeah, that one I see.
Is that what you're asking?
Right. Oh, construction progress.
So just so you know, you know, these are May. We don't have the June accounting yet, and normally at this point in time we'd be reporting on halfway through the year. So that $490,000 that I mentioned is not shown on this balance sheet that you have. It's just I asked Carissa to give me a listing of expenses that we had from June 1st to July 9th, just so I could make sure we had money in the bank and we hadn't overspent or, so I wanted to see where we were at. But I don't have a balance sheet or anything for June. I think when, you know, Lee gets back, we can catch up. And as for Mazingo, so part of it is there is a retainer, so when they bill, I think it's 10% gets withheld, right, until the end of the project, until they get substantially complete. And they probably are a bit behind. I think this summer, July and August are going to catch up, and we'll see more. Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
Yes.
Okay. It went dark, so, or you guys went dark. So I think, you know, when we, hopefully when we put the June numbers in, it'll show, you know, there'll be a higher completion. you know, or when we get the next July progress in, because I think they made a lot of progress in June that we haven't been billed for yet. So.
Yeah, I noticed they're out there working today.
Oh, yeah. Along with everybody else.
Really?
PG&E.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Services.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So when they submit a invoice, don't they say they're 35% done with complete construction?
They don't. I don't believe they do it on every one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you don't see any earned value at all.
They don't report that.
In 3 or 4 weeks, we're going to be meeting with one of the principals of Mozingo. It's just a, it's a healthy thing to do. And we're about halfway, or they're about halfway, or somebody's about halfway through the project. And to go over with them about how they feel about how things are going and how close they're going to come in on their bidding. There's some concern about if they're going to come in on the bid. There's nothing to indicate they won't, but I think it would be a good, healthy thing for us to sit down and talk to them. We plan to do that, and of course you'll all get the results of that.
A couple other things that I'll mention. On the income and expense statement, you see a large expenditure down there under distribution, $86,582. So that of that, most of that was for the PR, a bunch of PRVs and transmitters and meters that we purchased. That so that it, about 83 of that, 83,000 of that 86, are reimbursable costs for our USDA project.
Well, are you?
You seem to have a different document than we do.
This is under May.
Yeah.
Actual.
Yeah, May actual.
Yeah. So.
It's not the summary one. It's the more detailed one.
That's.
Right.
Oh, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was supposed to. Well, I predicted that we'd be spending it in June, but Mozingo, the construction company, put in. We're doing retros because the winter was still kind of off and on rain, so they're doing. They did strictly retros for the first part of spring in there, and they finished them. I mean, they were getting pretty close to being done, and we were running out of regulators. So I just went ahead and bought the rest early. And then the also the meters, the Golden State Flow Measurement, our meter supply guy said, well, you know, we want to make sure that we have them. So I went ahead and got them a little bit early in May. Wasn't it May, Carissa? Because I was worried that we wouldn't have them. The supply all of a sudden would not be there. So that's why that is a little bit earlier than I said I would do it.
So is that to complete, you bought them all and complete the project?
Yes, we should have everything we need now. There may be a couple here and there, but it's pretty good.
No, you know. As far as you know, it's good.
As far as I know, yeah.
So Sharon, another thing that I just kind of quickly looked at is based on expenditures for like the last 3 months, if you, you know, take it out the rest of the year, it looks like we should have enough cash in the bank to complete the year, if, unless there's some big surprises.
Okay, that's good. So we don't have to withdraw from the loan, right?
Right. Yeah, but we'll need to...
Sorry, the caffeine has not kicked in. No, that's good. Thank you. See, Tom should be treasurer, but there's a problem with the bylaws that you have to be on the board.
Actually, you were reelected secretary and treasurer. And I want you to know it was unanimous.
And we'd like to congratulate you.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you.
Knew you'd be thrilled. Anything else?
Okay.
Anything else on financials? Any questions from the board? Item B. Thanks, Sharon.
Sure.
Okay, so the usage, you have the charts, everybody.
Yeah.
Want to start out with the usage? in June. I sent out May's and a little comment on that. But you could see, if you go back to May, that we're using more water than we did for the first part of the year. Then last year and previous years, we're a little bit higher all the way through June with our usage. There's reasons, different reasons. We don't know them all. It could be that there are more people up here using water. The rainy winter we had probably has something to do with it. People kind of think that, wow, you know, there's no drought, so we don't have to. They're probably lightening up a little on the conservation. Also, we've had some leaks from the construction. Mazingo has, you know, our system is such that we don't have, was built in the 60s, started in the 60s. Our pipes are not well, not locatable except for the map we have. We don't have a locating wire in there, so we have to go by our maps. They're not always accurate. So, the part of the contract with Mazingo was to go out and try and find the pipes, pothole them. They have a vac machine, they go in and they suck the dirt out and try and locate pipes. And part of that process, they've broken them. And not on purpose, of course, but, you know, and also we've discovered that pipes are there in places we didn't even know they were there. So we've had a few breaks like that, and that, we get on it right away, we repair it, but there's some water loss that way too, so that contributed to the usage of May and June for the most part.
But it looks to me like if you look at from January to June, it's almost like a 10% increase in each month, except for February, where it looks like it's about 25% increase.
Mm-hmm. In total.
So that would make it sound more like a better economy, more people.
If
it was leakage, you wouldn't expect it to be the same in January and May.
Right.
The increase. So I don't see.
Well, in January, we did have some freeze-ups in the early part of the year. The temperature got down, I don't know, I think it was 17 degrees or something.
No, it was definitely cold.
At one time. Mm-hmm. So we had a few more houses freeze up than usual. And what happens is they, 2 or 3 days of 20 degrees, and then it warms up, and so the pipes break. And so it takes us a while to find them.
Yeah,
people aren't here. They don't live here, a lot of them. So they don't even know that they have a leak.
Overall, through June, we're 14% higher than last year.
Which, so, did you have any leaks with the properties where they haven't built a house on yet?
You mean bare lots?
Yeah. Do we already have pipes running to them?
Yes, we have a service box to every lot.
So, did any of those break?
No. It was all homes. But most of the time, people forget, and they will not shut the water off to their house when they go. And the power goes out or something, and then that's it. The heater can't heat it, and it gets cold and freezes.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Sharon, when we get time, we can get some more meter usage study data to see if that's showing anything different. I think we have it through March. So far, so it'll be interesting to see the last 3 months if things have changed at all.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if they're still running like 14% above last year. Is that what you want to see? Verify with the actual meters.
Well, and see, if the levels are really high and some, you know, that are driving it way up. Mm-hmm. You know, because we have a handful that can drive the average up pretty high.
That was a telling percentage you gave
14.
In June about the percentage of the customers we have. They're using half the water. And the percentage wasn't very large. I forget the exact number, but wasn't very large.
Yes, I think 75%, the ones that are using less than the allotment, 75% are using 25% of the water. And I forget what the percentage was, but are using 75% of the water. Or 50%, I can't remember. But yeah, it is pretty telling.
Well, I think some of it is a reaction to what you just mentioned about the drought's over. Well, they think it is.
Yeah.
Actually, the drought's over, and the next one has already started.
It's
interesting when you listen to meteorologists, those that, I guess, that you would respect that have some sense of future, they're talking about the pattern changing into five-year droughts and heavy winters, and then five-year droughts and heavy winters, as opposed to what we've enjoyed in the past of no drought-like conditions and mild winters. Now, whether it comes to be or not, it's up for the future to tell. But I think a natural outgrowth of that this huge snowpack that we have is people feel that they can use more. Mm-hmm. And we have the message, and we continue to convey the message on conservation, but I don't think people read into it. But we'll keep it in front of them.
Yeah, I've had a few homeowners ask me questions. They've got their bill, and they had to pay for extra water. You know, so I don't know if they were new meters that they hadn't experienced that before, or what. But they weren't complaining. But they were just, they brought it up that, oh, I've never had to pay for water before above our annual fee. So,
party's over.
Well, to be fair, then, I mean, the whole argument is that part-timers are subsidizing the full-timers, and because it was all one fee at one time, it was just one fee per year, because we didn't have meters. So now that we're putting meters on, everyone will pay for what they use.
What's surprising to me, and I guess it shows on the financials, the line item in income for meters, the dollar amount, and I know we don't do it every month, it's every other month, mm-hmm. but that dollar amount is lower than we projected, even though the usage is up 14%, mm-hmm. So that's surprising. When Lee gets back, I'll sit down with her and try to understand that.
Well, I mean, the way I look at it is if you don't use your lot or your house up here, whether you call it investment property or not, it is investment property, mm-hmm. like with your personal finance. And that property has no value if they don't have water access.
Right.
So they need to pay for it, like everybody else. Mm-hmm.
So,
from that point of view, they're not really getting ripped off.
Oh, no.
Well, they come from the Bay Area, where East Bay Mud just kicked their rates up 6.75%, and they're going to kick it up next year 6.75%, and they don't say anything about that.
Well, we could spend a long time.
I was going to say, yeah, that's for another year.
But anyway, on the usage, I went back 6 years. And the average for those 6 years for the month of June was 4.2 million for June. So this June it's 4.3. So it's really not. If you add up 6 years before, that comes out, the average comes out to 4.2. We're at 4.3, so we're not like crazy with it. We'll just keep an eye on it for the rest of the year and see how it comes out. Production is, we're using about, by this point in the year, we're about half and half. CCWD purchase and our wells. It's about even. The production, if you look for June, and the total production for the year so far is 11 million 2, and for all of last year, the production is 22. So we're about half there. So that isn't, that's looking okay for, to me. I'm seeing it going up, but I don't know, you know, the rest of the year is left, so we'll see what happens on production.
So, as a newcomer, can you explain to me, how do you decide when you're going to pump water out of wells or take it from CCWD?
It automatically fills the CCWD tank, or it's not their tank, it's ours.
Okay.
We have an altitude valve on it.
Okay, so it just...
It just fills
demand.
Up. It's our demand that demands it, or that tells how much we're going to use. So, but we do have restrictions on it. We can't use over 100,000 gallons a day. Mm-hmm. But normal days, that averages out to a month too. It's not day by day. It's the how much we use for the whole month. So we're, you know, well under that.
But are we, the amount of water in the wells, you know, based on the height above the pump, is it at historical high levels or is it normal?
It is, well, you have to go, depending on what year you're talking about.
Well, in the last, significantly higher than the last 5 years?
Yes.
10 years? Okay.
Well, in the past, we had to pump all our water from the well, all of our usage, which... Now we're only pumping half of what we use, so that allows the wells to maintain their levels for a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing, because we're in hurting there in 2013.
You measure how hard the water is, right, from the well?
Yeah.
Has that changed?
It has changed.
It should be less, right?
Well, you know, we're pumping less water. That, you know, you'd know more about it than I, but I'm guessing that because the water sits in the rock, it's actually...
Well, it takes the minerals, right?
It takes the, it leaches out the minerals. It sits in there longer because we're not pumping it as much. So
no.
I think it's for the concentration of calcium carbonate and stuff like that is probably higher, I would think. At least that's what the customers are saying. They're getting more... Yeah.
Dishwasher residue.
Build up the residue.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is one side of it that I noticed that seems to be more of that. It's getting harder a little bit.
So I just have one. I don't want to take up too much time, but on this chart, the blue and the red, what does that mean? I want to make sure I understand.
The blue is the
water. Corresponds with the grid just below it.
The blue is
BLS and CCWD is
okay.
Red.
Right. Oh,
so the red is what we purchased,
yeah.
And the blue is what we produced.
So do we get any complaints from homeowners that get CCWD water?
No. No, they like that. It's the water from the river, so it's a lot softer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they don't have the minerals. I mean, I think our water's healthier than our well water because it has to dissolve minerals in it. So we get, you know, the benefit of minerals. It's healthier. People used to, you know, drink mineral water, so.
No, they people buy in the store.
So I don't know. Yeah. But, so we're pretty good. Half and half, CCWD, half ours. Wells look great. If we go on to the unless there's any more questions on the production, the water in the well, both wells that were used is up there pretty high. Let's see, well 3 and 4, the wells we use, and well number 3 tops out usually at 170 feet. And it's at 157 feet right now. That well puts out about 250 gallons a minute. So that's our best well. And well 4, it tops out usually 776 feet above the pump intake. And we're at 770. And that well pumps about 90 gallons a minute. So we're pumping about 350 gallons a minute for an average pump a day, which, and we pump about 7 hours a day. And depending on the time of year, we could, in the winter, we're pumping maybe twice a week, maybe three times a week. Now we're pumping a little bit every other day or so because of there's so more people up here.
The performance on well four hasn't gone down at all since we first started it?
It has been fantastic. And we're pumping it at maximum that it can pump. And it just recovers quickly.
Oh, that's good.
So we can, we made a good, even though it wasn't cheap. And it's kind of a lot of trouble to do, but it's working out really good.
So what determines the gallon per minute pumping rate? Is that the horsepower of the pump, the size of the well casing?
Yeah, it's the horsepower of the pump, it's the feet of water above the pump, the head on it that it has to push against, and those factors are it pretty much, right?
Generally, when I've done those before, when they drill a well, the driller does some test on it, see how much water he can get out in the drawdown, and they size the pump for what that well can do. So they drill the well and test it and say, oh, this well can do 250, and this well can do 90. So that's really, I mean, if you put a bigger pump in well four, you just draw it down and shut off. So it's kind of the structure of the ground.
Oh, okay.
Well, the Ludorf and Scalamonini is the ones that recommended that, that pump for well four.
That's after they drilled it and tested it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we went with that. Now, I know, there's some talk about, well, maybe we should have put a bigger one in.
Yeah, but then you're just going to draw
But then the water level will go down faster, so we're pretty good where we're at, I think.
Well, 4 and 5 and 6, which are not, 5 and 6 are not part of the system, although can be, are a result of a 2-year search we did looking for water. And the 18 or 20 sites that were proposed by those that say there's water there, only 2 or 3 paid off. Only, and those are the ones that we have functioning. And we were at a time in history where we had to get additional wells. CCWD would not sell us water. They told us at a public meeting it was illegal. And we're still waiting for the citation that says so. And what saved us was one of the prior managers visited our meeting one Saturday after he was recently appointed and asked, why are we not a customer of theirs? So we told him, and within a month or two we were. So we buy half our water from CCWD. That extends the life of our pumping system appreciably. And based upon the experience we had a few years ago, do a lot of digging and find nothing. And the results, if I said they were grim, that would be a compliment. And why everything was so dry, drought, no drought, there just wasn't any water where we drilled. And we were down at 800, sometimes past 800 feet. Well, number three is one you keep your fingers crossed on because it's about 30 years old.
It was drilled in 2001.
Oh, excuse me, 18 years old. Probably has a 35-year life, maybe 40. We take great care of it, feed it anything it wants to eat.
Just change the pump motor.
It's one of three wells that are about in the same area. And the other two, we have used in the past, and they're no longer perform. Well number three takes a dump, craps out. Well number four cannot supply, or it would be hard for well number four to supply half the system. So we're going to rely on the two that we have and keep our partnership up with Calaveras County. Somebody asked at the annual meeting, why don't we convert over to Calaveras County Water, if you remember the question. Practically, there's a huge expense to it. It has to do with capacity and connection fees. And we've already run the numbers, and I think the number was around $3.1 million. That just gets us in the door. And then it gets into CCWD's ability to process more water to fill our system than they're currently applying.
Does that change with the new pipeline that they're running between Forest Meadows and Avery?
I don't think so. I think that their biggest expense, if we increased our demand, was they'd have to redo their treatment plant.
Treatment plant larger.
Yeah.
But they won't. They're already under. They have all the water they need right now. This line that they replaced through Arnold, and that line that they're replacing now, they estimated they were losing 30% of their water. In fact, who told me? Somebody told me.
Oh, because of leakage?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, leakage out of the pipe.
Hmm.
30% is a huge amount.
Yeah,
you got the treatment plant treating water, and a third of it's gone down in the dirt.
We got holes in the pipe, obviously.
Yes.
God, I hope so.
So,
when they're going into our wells, I guess.
How old is their pipe?
I don't know the exact year, but it's so bad that it was just. They had to fix it a lot. And then somebody was walking out there and talking to me, and they said they walked along and they found three leaks. Yeah, right now, when they were just walking along the work area where they're going to replace the pipe, they found three leaks. So the thing's constantly leaking. If they repair that and they add this savings here, they're going to be saving quite a bit of more water, so that's even more water that they can. Their capacity of their plant can easily take care of us. Mm-hmm. Now with these improvements they're making, it's even better for us. So I don't see us having to, unless everybody starts moving up to Blue Lakes, I don't see us having to add to their plant in the near future. I don't know how long.
The county's master plan, every county is required to have one. And they redid it in, I think it was 2005 or 2010, predicted a population up here of close to 10,000. And none of it manifested. None of their projections manifested on population.
Also, they were predicting 500 gallons a day average use per household.
Yeah, I don't know where they got that. But,
but they revised that.
What is it now?
Shoot, they were coming up with what? It was 100 and something. Yeah, it's the same thing with us. With Blue Lakes, there's a lot of part-time people that live up in our home. So it dropped a lot when they got realistic with it. It was 190 gallons a day or something like that.
Our best research shows that 12 to 15% of our entire population customer base is full-time. And if you've worked with other water companies, and I know you have, imagine the effort you have to put in just to maintain something like that. You have to maintain the whole system, 12 or 15. You don't know which part of the system the 12 and 15% are going to use. And of course, it peaks on holidays, and it peaks at certain times during the year. And that's almost predictable. Almost.
Well, the thing that we have to instill in people's understanding is water is one of those utilities that you just expect when you turn on the faucet, whether you're part-time or full-time, whether you're a senior or whether you're a household with six kids. Mm-hmm. You turn the faucet on, you want the water, and you want the water to be a high quality, so there's a cost to do that and have that availability, and that's been my argument all along for a higher fixed base cost for part-timers as well as the full-timers, because it's an on-demand, you turn on the light switch, you want the electricity. And, you know, it's a, beyond the base cost of electricity, it's a, you know, then dependent upon how many lights or how many, you know, electrical appliances you're using, and the same is true with water.
Well, the nice thing about the electrical systems is that you have backups. Every one of us has candles and flashlights and other devices and maybe a generator. But it comes to water. How many of you have a spare water tank with potable water? You know.
I noticed that I think the sign for Arnold, the population went down on on that sign from a year or two ago. Well, it used to be right about the elevation.
Yeah, it used to be 4,000.
Yeah, it's like 3,800 now. Wow. Or something like that. Yeah.
I think that's a stretch.
I don't think there's 38 full time. There definitely wasn't 3,800 in February.
No.
Or March.
No, we didn't get a lot of it this year at the annual meeting, but normally you do about. Guy raises his hand and says, I live in Arizona or somewhere and I only come up here 6 weeks a year and I don't want to pay this kind of money for.
Right.
Well, if you have a telephone or cable, you do.
Well, if Trump prevails in getting the citizenship question put on the ballot, our population will double.
Thank you, Andy.
That was supposed to be a joke.
All right. Any other comments or questions on the manager's report?
I have one quick question. You mentioned well 5 and 6. What's the status of those that have been on this report?
I'm sorry. Which part?
You were talking about the wells 3 and 4, but you mentioned wells 5 and 6.
Dave?
We have a well 2 that's it's out at White Pines. Well 3 is at White Pines, right by the ball field. They're in the same, it's really not an aquifer, it's just a fractured rock environment, but you turn one on, the other one goes down. So we don't use well 2 unless well 4 went out, then we turn on well 2. Well 4, which is over behind the Moose Hall, is in a different fracture zone, I guess you'd call it, so that the wells don't affect each other, so that they can add to it without drawing each other down.
Right.
We have a well over on Borad's property, which is on Dunbar Road. I don't know how to say where it is. Probably right by the dump.
It's our
right next to the
dump. Property, right?
Doesn't sound very good.
It's our property.
Yeah.
It's right back here.
We purchased the
property. It's right back there.
Okay.
And that, we have it, we own it, it's eight acres.
Something like that, yeah.
But we have a well, a 100-gallon-a-minute well there that we can use if things, you know, we're holding on to it. The pipeline from there to our present well, 4, is if that's where we would connect. It means running a pipeline down Dunbar, going across and over up to right around the Moose Hall is where we hook in. We would have to run the line. We'd
so
have to build.
There's a well there, but it's not connected.
It's just a hole in the ground right now.
Okay, yeah, it's capped off.
Yeah. Part of the history spin on this is that we were pursuing these ventures, and there was a change of general managers at CCWD, which allowed us to reaffirm our position and purchase water for them. And that came after this exhaustive search. This 2-year search we went through was an adventure. I mean, we were, at the time, it was, it'd make you sweat just thinking if we could get water. And when you're the only other option is the neighboring water company, and they say it's illegal for us to sell it to you. I mean, you don't have a lot of options left. So we were we were out, you go into the public, you've got to find water, then you have to get the owners, and we did on every piece we looked at, got the owners okay to drill. All of our contracts were subject to finding water at a certain rate. Otherwise, there'd be no deal. You end up with a hole in the ground. We'll cover it for you. And we did that. And It was grim. It was a tough time.
So the rivers are all out of question?
Well, the South Fork is, I forget how far away. It's to the east, or south of us, excuse me. If you're going east towards the mountains, that
just
way.
Too far.
Yeah, and it's, we looked at that, laying a pump and pipe and then having to traverse north across the ground over highway or under highway 4, and it it was a fallback position, but it would have been a terribly costly one. And then you get into the issue of water rights.
Yeah,
we learn a lot about water rights.
Yeah,
a lot of them go back to the last or the century before last. It's kind of fascinating. And of course, then when water became a political issue in California, that was about the same time we're looking for water. Now we have to report where every drop goes, and the rules of engagement in the state have changed. So with all that, we're fortunate to have a partnership that we do, and as a complement to that, in fact, part of our contract with CCWD is to maintain our wells and to pursue the other wells if necessary. And thus far, it's worked out extremely well. Anything else on the manager's report? On item B, item C, the project?
Yeah. Okay, the project.
The project.
The big project. All right, I'll just start out by saying how far the construction crew, how much stuff has been, pipe has been put in the ground. 65,000 linear feet of pipe was the original project estimation. They put in 37,000 feet of pipe. That's about 56%. Now that is just the pipe alone.
The blue pipe.
The blue pipe with the saddle on it for the service. So they just take their, they dig it, they throw the pipe in. Not quite that bad. They put the pipe in, they put service saddles on it, and then they cover it up. So that has been put in. If you look at this map, these colored lines are our new project. The other lines here, some there that are present pipe that we have in the ground now. So they have all of this pipe in here, here, all of
David, this. David, you indicate where Moran Road is to you?
This is Moran right here.
Yeah, okay.
This road.
So is that one of the map, was it accurate, or, I mean, the piping map you said?
Yeah, this is...
You were finding pipes you didn't know you had?
Oh, no, that's our old system.
Okay, all right.
This is the new stuff.
Okay.
That they're going to be, that they're laying. They've already put in pipe here, here, part of this.
Well, I think the question that Bill raises is, let me try to answer for you, Bill. It's been spurious. It's in different places where they've found, run into existing pipe that wasn't supposed to be where it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there's, based on the mapping, there was supposed to be pipe that isn't. So it's really the unexpected pipe that's been problematic. That's where all the leaks are coming from. Mm-hmm. Or the, you know,
the breaks. Yeah.
Breaks, yeah.
It's our grandfather's fault. They didn't write down that there's no mapping.
So they put in all this pipe here, this pipe here. So all we have left in this whole side is Shannon Way and Julia Way, and a little bit here. They've already done Annalene. Actually, it's just Shannon and Julia. That will complete the pipe itself in on this whole side, because we're doing this side in here. And all this colored, the colored lines are the new construction.
So, Dave, if you look at the map, if you go that way from the yellowed areas.
This way?
Yeah, go straight left into that area there.
Mm-hmm.
So why isn't that area being done?
because this is already has mains of the street, hydrants, area leaves. It used to have lines behind the homes. The lines were back here. But we've done projects. So this project has been completed. So the mains are in the street. We have hydrants. We have new water boxes, area leaves, regulators, main regulators. So that's why this is not being done. It's already done.
So is that the area where the people have already redone their service line?
Yes. That's where they've already had to connect. Okay. From the back, in a lot of cases, back to all cases, it was in the back. So they had to go from, that's kind of, you can see here, but behind the homes is the original main, and here's the new main. So they had to come up from their home to the new box. And they all paid for it.
Yeah.
When the board was faced with the issue of CCWD cutting us off, we had just completed the project that Dave is talking about, and we stopped any further work and trying to go out to find water and put our financial resources into that. That was about a five-year venture, and towards the end of the five-year part, we started to entertain the option of applying originally for a USDA grant, and it was not granted, so we pursued the loan. So there's a part of our customer base has long been completed and is not affected, or there's very little effect on the current project on the areas that we've already attended to.
So Dave, excuse me, in our long range planning committee meeting, Billy came in and joined us. One of the questions that came up based on some discussions we were having about the main lines being put in, is whether or not the saddles were being put on at every location where they were needed.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought that most of them were, but he wasn't sure if all of them were. Do you know?
If all of them are being put on. If one gets left off, I mean, what we're doing is going ahead. The foreman, construction foreman, is laying it out. He goes out ahead of the crew. He's got pink paint, probably stops seeing that, a lot of that. But he goes out and he locates each service, which has been located by our engineers a year ago or so, or even longer ago. We've walked every single water service at every single new part of the new project and located the new service box. So there's a stake there. So then the foreman of the crew goes out ahead of the crew with his pink paint, and he looks and tries to find the stake. If it's up on a bank or it's straight, off the road somewhere, he sees that and he marks, puts an arrow. Then when they lay the pipe, they see the arrow, oh, there's a service. And that's how they determine that. So every single service, if he can't find a stake, he says, wow, there's no stake here. But the map, the plans say there's a service. So then he calls Robert, our inspector, and usually Robert will do it. But I've done it too. We go out there and we find it or we locate it for him. Mm-hmm. So then he puts his arrow. So every service is being double, triple checked to make sure we got a saddle on board. Mm-hmm. In fact, some of them, we're still today having guys say, what we did is we sent out pictures of the homes, a map of the individual lot, where the old service box is and where the new one is. And so to give the homeowner a chance to take a look at that, because he's going to have to hook that up. And we say, here's where we're going to put your new service. Do you like that? Is it going to work for you? We don't know every circumstance of all the homeowners. So we gave him a chance to say, hey, I don't like my new service over here. I want it over in the other pin. Change it. So we're getting those. Still, even though we tried to, we sent them out
a year ago.
Was it a year ago? Yeah.
It was typical. Fall of 2017, I think.
Yeah. So, quite a while ago.
So we're still getting them, and there are some special cases where we're moving them for them, which means digging them up and putting a new saddle in a different spot. But for the most part, they're all getting put in, and if any question comes up from the contractor, we come out right away and go, hey, we'll put
so
it right there.
You put a saddle and a piece of pipe and a valve, and then they can come back and just...
Yeah, we put the saddle on while they're laying the pipe. Then they come back in and they drill it. It's still dry, right? They drill it and then they put the service crew comes in and puts the pipe up coming off. And,
okay.
And right now they're trying to dump it underground with a mole. They use this pneumatic hammer underground. I don't know if you've seen them. You've probably seen them. But they're trying to go underground and dig these services.
Yeah.
They have to dig a pit next to the pipe or across the street from the pipe.
Do the directional drilling.
Yeah, but it's the direction is, you know, they take a level and they eyeball it. That's about as good. But they're getting pretty good at it.
How deep are they?
Have to be 2 feet. Yeah. At least 2 feet above grade or below grade, I mean. For the services, but it avoids digging up the street, so that's why we like them to do that, because we are cutting, you know, what our streets look like, and then having more and more cuts in them is not good. So anyway, so a lot of pipe has been put in. The plan is to, now that the pipe is in, to go back and dig them up and put these services in.
Are there any plans to repair the roads after the project is done?
They're going to pave everything that we've dug up, and the road is going to be paved with hot mix before winter.
Oh, good.
Not the whole road.
Just where there's been the digging. For the most part, we're on the edge of pavement. Sometimes we have to go out on the road because of different reasons.
But didn't the county originally want us to do extensive paving?
Well, we were afraid they would, but they never actually have said we want you to pave the whole half section of the road, especially since we're mostly on the edge of pavement. So, yeah, we'll have to pave a T-section, I think it's 72 inches. Mm-hmm. Isn't that right? Mm-hmm. The final paving, but... What I'm saying now, before the end of the year, they're going to put hot mix in, but that's not the final paving. They just want to put that in. It's a lot better than that cold mix that you guys see that flakes off. And so they're going to do the hot mix. It's more like on Russell. If you take a ride up Russell Drive, you'll see it's a lot harder. And they're going to do that for winter. And then next year, they're going to do the final, which is good to grind it. Put a little T, 72 inch, I believe it is, if we're in the road. Most of the time we're not in the road, we're on the edge.
What's the normal maintenance on the county maintains the road?
Yes.
So what's their maintenance schedule for repaving?
They don't have it yet.
They don't have any money. We're not even on their radar except for snow plowing.
They're supposed to come out with something.
When they pave the road, right, they use a certain type of asphalt. What was the lifetime of that asphalt?
I mean, they would have to... Some of those roads are the original. There's no road base under them. They're just...
Now I'm just trying to think whether or not they have an obligation that we don't have to take on their obligation.
Well, that's the idea. We want to avoid that. So we have a permit that we use, an encroachment permit, and that determines what we're supposed to do. And what we're supposed to do is, if we're in the road, we're going to pave the ditch section that we dug out, and then a little T on top of that to lock it in. And that's what we're supposed to do. We're not supposed to pave the whole half of the road.
Okay.
But there are a lot of people in Blue Lake Springs that are upset.
Yeah, I saw the email.
It's not just us. It's the tree people, those huge trucks.
Yeah.
It is the intern trucks. They're working on the poles. Those things are gigantic, those trucks. And I know all that work has to be done, but I mean, the county needs to think about. I don't know how they let people just use the roads without.
But Linden and Marin is a mess. I mean, I don't know why someone can't just come in and fill it up, you know?
Oh, you slurry coat it?
Yeah, it's a friggin' mess.
I know, we want to. We talked about it at the last meeting, so they're going to do something with that. I think they will.
Somebody should do something.
Yes.
Where is that, Paul?
That's up at Linden Moran, where that steep area where that
oh.
It's getting dug out by people.
Like it's about this deep.
Hmm.
Yeah, last.
Well, the county does. The county does get money. In the new budget, the new state budget, Calaveras County, excluding the City of Angels, has been granted $9.8 million for road repair. And last year they had $8.9 million. That would be interesting to see where the money went. Because counties are notorious for transferring money from one fund to another. Even though that's gasoline tax revenue. Of course, that revenue is going to go up because a couple of weeks ago the gas tax went up.
Well, there's a challenge to find out how they spend the tax dollars. So.
Well, there are people complaining to us about our trucks, and well, we're not the only trucks. You know, we're not the heaviest ones. We're the most frequent. We did video all, as Dave mentioned, we did video all the streets we're going to be working on. So we'll have a before and after.
Okay.
But there are other contractors up here, and we've certainly taken note of that. And reality is you can't put in a water system in a right-of-way without affecting the road. It just can't happen. So, unfortunately, this is not something we're going to do every year for the next few years. But I think we ought to be pleased with the way things are going.
So, anyway, can you get back to the project, the services? We do have some services installed. About 11% of those, of the total services are installed now. So that's some on, we'll go up here, on the main zone, which in another couple of weeks, here is the main zone right here, this blue lines. And a little bit here, and Linda, and that's so far, that's as far as it goes, but they've pressure tested that, they put all the services in, all the hydrants, all the air reliefs, and have tested that area, and it's passed the pressure test, so. All that remains for the main zone is to put main regulators in. We have three put in. And when they're in, then they will chlorinate the pipe. We will take back T-tests. And if they pass, then we'll flush it out. If they pass, we'll have letters out from the people that live there, and then they can start hooking up in the main zone. So I figure another 2 weeks. They have to finish up what they're doing, is trying to finish this whole side and then just not go to this side yet and put all the services and the hydrants and everything in and regulators in this area here so that people can start hooking up. And I would say in October they'll get letters up for this part. Well, that's kind of where we are. The plan then would be, as we are working on our booster station, which is here, Cypress Point, so it's here. We're also working on this. This is a booster station, a pump, that we can pump water from our tank. Hold on, this would be up here. Here's our tank. This is where we have one big tank. Up in Lilac Park, that's where we get CCWD water from. But we'll be able to pump water from this tank over to our other tank up here. They're both 750,000 gallon tanks, and we will be able to pump through this new booster pump we're building. We'll be able to pump water from this tank here to here, and that will allow us to, we can actually use more water from CCWD if we need to. Our agreement says we can do that. In the winter, we could actually turn the wells off for 3 or 4 months if we wanted to, and just use exclusively CCWD water. So it's a way, and also in the case of fire, we can run water anywhere we want, from here to here, here to here, here to here, up in there. This water could contribute to, if we had a fire up in this area, we have the ability to move it around.
So where on the map are the wells, our wells?
Well, they are on the map, are, here's White Pines, the little, all the little buildings.
That's where the elementary school is?
Yeah, here's Hazel Fisher, the school. So the wells are out here, by the ball field.
Yeah.
We have our other well on Dunbar here. It's kind of hard to tell on this, but it's around this area here. Is our well that we're just holding on to right now. We got to pipe it over to there and build the whole, you know, the whole well set up. So
that pump station's almost done?
No, it used to be there. It was an old one and it had old pipes and everything in it. So we had to go in, and because of the way it is, it has lines here, all the AC lines, transite. Pipe here and then pipe going down here. We had to insert a valve here and turn some valves so that there's no water in these pipes anymore. We're gonna have to replace them. Yeah. So we're working on that right now. The new thing has been, the foundation's not totally done yet, but they've done the footings for it. We've got a little retaining wall up. Yeah. So they're working on that building. So the progress on that just started, say 4% on that one.
Mm-hmm.
But so we're going to continue on. And
how big is that pump?
It's 230 gallons a minute, wasn't it? You don't remember? Yeah, I think it's around 225 to 230 gallons a minute. So we have 750,000 gallons, and not quite that much. And each tank is 600 something, but we have over 1 million gallons of storage at all times, so that we can run, we can supply a lot of water to our system if we need to, before we even have to turn on the pump. But that pump is there for us. We can manage our water better in the system, how much CCWD water we use, how much of the wells we use, we can control that a lot better. Also, if we have, because I'm going into it too much, but the tank 6 is our main tank, it's the highest one. So the water will, when we make water at the treatment plant, we pump it up there. Wells are here, raw water comes to the plant, treats it and pumps it up to 6. Something happened to this water line here, or in here, any of these lines that are even the treatment plant, something happened to that, I don't know, pipes blew out or something happened, we can use this booster pump to pump water from the one tank to the other, so we wouldn't be totally in a dangerous situation. So this booster pump started out in the project to be kind of, don't think we'll use it much. It gained more importance when we started thinking about the problems that we could have. So that thing is being worked on now. All these pipes are in except for right here. They're going to be working on services all the way up until the October. Hopefully they'll be done by then so we can send out letters. They'll be testing this in that month. And then people could start hooking up to here, these ones. these new services. So that's kind of where we're at. They plan on jumping over here next year to finish that up. And that side is a whole different story than this side. Because those lines, every single line is in the back, the old lines. There's no water lines in the street, so they can just dig. There won't be, like, on these ones that are in the street, there's the main, the old main, which is usually a 2-inch. And then you've got your laterals coming out, which is 3/4-inch really thin plastic laterals. So when they dig the new main, they have to miss those little laterals. You have to miss the new main, the old main, which is sometimes not on the map where it's supposed to be. That's why we've been having problems.
Yeah.
And, but over here, they're not going to have that. They're just going to be able to dig like crazy. So that's kind of what the plan is for that.
So Dave, while you're there at the map, I want to bring up a later agenda item, and that's your emergency generator mm-hmm. request. So where would that be deployed?
It would go out to the well 3. So we don't want to, you know, if we try, we can't put both wells on it because well 4 is a different, whole different thing.
Now deployed is different than where we're going to keep it.
Yeah.
You're asking if we take it out and use it, where would we put it?
Yeah,
is
right.
Is that what you mean? Not where we're going to keep it when it's not in use?
Correct.
Okay. Sorry about that.
So not maybe not for this meeting, but it'd be, for since I'm new, if you just had like a map like that and just put an X where the wells are and where the tanks are.
Okay.
That way I can
have other
it'll
maps.
Help me.
Yeah,
it's real simple for a layman. You know?
No, we have better maps of the well. When we're doing our well search, we have a better map that shows the wells, where they are.
Or like 3 and 4, and then
mm-hmm.
and then when we get to the generator, I just have a couple questions. But
okay.
No, but I think this is very good information for me. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. Sorry, that much detail.
If we do have a power outage,
mm-hmm.
we don't need generated power to get water up to the holding tanks?
No, because we have a huge generator at the treatment plant built in. Here's how we're going to have to test. If we get a new portable generator, we're going to have to test it. Part of that testing will be, it's on a trailer, so we bring it out to the well 3. Well 3 produces enough water for us to be, we could actually supply all of ourselves with just well 3 in case of, say, the power's going to be off. PG&E was not going to anticipate a shutdown just for fire danger. They're saying 3 days. Mm-hmm. So if we say, wow, it could be more, say 5 days, you know, I can see us using that generator if it's over 3 days, because we can last 3 days with our storage. But if we have a fire moving up here and it's coming up from Murphy's or something like that, they're going to shut the power off, and they could be off for a week and a half. Who knows, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of what made me want. Before I wasn't, you know, I thought, you know, we can always rent one, get it up here, but then the highway might be closed. There's a fire, can't get stuff up. Anyway, we would deploy it out here at well 3. We would have our generator at the treatment plant on, so both those generators would be going. Tank 4 is... Here's tank 4 over here. This tank is where our SCADA gets the signal. It sends a signal from the plant to this tank and then it over to the wells. That has a solar array on it. So that the SCADA, we have to have SCADA, everybody knows what that is. It's our control, electronic controls. We have SCADA here at the wells, at the tank. If power goes out at here, we have a generator. If we get a new one, or if we get one, a portable one, we have power there. Here we have solar for backup. So that our SCADA system would work. So we would have generator power for that, well, three, the treatment plant, and SCADA operation for all of it.
So what about CCWD's ability to get water to tank four?
Yeah, well, they have, in our agreement, they say that if they have problems getting water, then, well, they're not obliged to provide water to us if they have trouble. They say they will provide as much as they can.
So, but I think...
Doesn't mean, you know...
Wasn't your question, does CCWD have backup generators to supply water to us if they
need it? Yes. And I can see that happening in, say, a winter situation, maybe, where it powers up because storms and trees fall all over the place.
That could be 4 or 5 days, too.
We can use our generator system for that, too, if we need it. But I'm more concerned about the fire thing, because that's when CCWD is more, they have to be concerned about their own people plus their own fire protection. They may tell us, hey, we're not gonna give you water right now because we need it. So in that case, we can actually, with our storage, we can pretty much take care of ourselves. Now, the demand on it, who knows? It's a fire, a lot of people be evacuated, but I remember quite a few years ago, the old Gulch fire, they evacuated Blue Lakes. And a lot of people left their sprinklers on top of their houses, sprinklers all over the yards. They just turned on water all over everything. We had to go around them, because our tanks were going down. We didn't have any. You know, that made me think, you know, if we have to, we can supply ourselves as much as possible. You turn on 10 hydrants and, you know,
you're only going to get...
So we're trying to have the best scenario we can have in the case of that.
Well, if it gets to a large fire, those big tanks will go through those hydrants in no time.
Yeah. But they're there.
Yeah.
So if we have a fire, well, here's our hydrant map, and you can't see that very well either, but... Our new hydrants are all, it will have, what did we say, Chris?
184.
184 hydrants total.
Yeah. Wow.
We're adding 84 new ones. Mm-hmm. So I'm seeing, you know, maybe something's approaching. If a fire was coming up on the edge of Blue Lakes, we'll have ability to fight it. Whether or not we can, it just depends on the, you know, getting enough wind, it's going to.
Billy said that Cypress Station is what he thought would have 200 gallon per minute pumps.
We have two pumps, but chances are we won't use them together.
So they're
we could.
To answer his question, Dan, 200 gallons per minute.
One on duty, one on standby.
Yes. So we'll... That's kind of where we're at on the construction. They do plan to go in at the end of the project, and we're going to replace all these hydrants. We have hydrants in Unit 13. They don't even have valves to shut them off. So, and they're old, so we're going to replace those and add a regulator in there, and that's what we're going to do there. So,
with all these new hydrants, is that going to bring down the insurance?
A good question. I mean, it depends on the insurance company.
Yeah, you think it.
I called mine and I said, well, I'm not in Blue Lakes, but I have a hydrant right across the street.
Yeah.
And the inspector came and looked at my house and said, wrote up his report and said, no fire hydrant within 900 feet. So he missed it, I guess. He didn't see it. So I called the company and I go, hey, he says I don't have a hydrant. I said, yeah, well, I have one right across the street. Oh, we don't go by that. We got to go by where you live. In the forest. So I got canceled.
Oh, jeez.
You know?
Well, Jeff Jones, who couldn't be here today,
right,
called his insurance company after the hydrant was installed on history, and they dropped his rate.
Yeah, right.
So the ones that are still covering
that's the exception,
in here, well, it'll be a benefit, I'm sure.
Yeah, he dropped it $100. Well, yeah.
Lease cancellation.
You know, the they're looking. The insurance carriers have gone by beyond the looking for excuses not to carry people up there. They just get up and walk away, or they make it so a cost prohibitive for you to have their services.
So they don't kill just the same. The hydrant's a hydrant, right? I mean, cause actually, they put a brand new Flight and Acres put a new hydrant on my property line when they did their system last year.
Mm-hmm.
So what?
Well, they used to. They used to put great faith in how close you live to a hydrant.
Right. Yeah.
Until a couple of fires. You know, you get the fires like we've seen in the last couple of years. Hydrants aren't going to do anything.
That's true.
Okay, any questions about the project? Additional projects?
Well, I think Tom's going to talk about that later, but I just to say that, you know, we do have additional projects that weren't included in the original USDA infrastructure project. For various reasons, but if there's money left over from this project, then we plan to try and do some of these additional projects. So right now we're waiting to see how the money's going to come out, and Tom's got more information on that. Next time there. That it?
Yeah. Plumbers meeting.
Plumbers meeting.
Oh, the plumbers meeting. Well, you guys have the. Well, there's going to be a lot of customers that have to hook up to the new service box that they're going to get. Some of the service boxes, the new ones are in the right next to the old ones.
Right.
But some of them are in. They'll have to go from their house shut off out to the new box. So they're going to be getting bids, hiring plumbers. So we have a list of plumbers that we have to refer. Not really. We can't recommend any of them, but they're all licensed. We have a list of plumbers. So I contacted our people on that list, the plumbers, and sent them all kind of do's and don'ts. What some of them are not familiar with Blue Lake Springs. We're not like every common kind of water system. We have water lines behind the homes. The water service boxes are on top. It's a little riser coming out of a 2-inch or 1.5-inch old plastic main. So you can't go in there and start tearing stuff up and turning valves and doing things. So I'm going to have some directions for them. And it's, rather than having a meeting with them, because some may not be able to make it and all that, I just called each one of them and gave them that, those instructions.
Are you documenting the phone calls?
No. Well, I mean, I checked it off. I called you, I called him, I called him.
No, I just want to make sure that our liability is, like, if you put a plumber's name on the list.
Well, that's our attorney how he gets the jitters from it, but we only do it and we tell everyone it's a courtesy because they're always.
When you're certifying whether you're doing it consciously or unconsciously, you're telling the homeowner this plumber knows what he's doing. So if.
We're telling the homeowner that he has he's a licensed contractor. He is licensed. That's what we're telling him. We're not telling him that he's a good one.
No.
You can't say that.
No, but you.
We just.
I mean, if he's a licensed contractor, it's public knowledge, right? You can
right.
Look it up. All right. So you're not really telling him anything. But when you point him out, that could be considered an endorsement, whether you say it or not.
That's what the attorney gets nervous about.
We should get nervous.
We felt that we should.
Anyway, but.
As a courtesy, because everybody was asking. A lot of people don't live here. They don't know who's here. They don't know the plumbers around here. They live out of town. They come a couple weekends a month or something, or maybe a month out of the whole year. They're living in Arizona or somewhere, and they go, well, you don't know. So we, as a courtesy to them, when we tell them this, here's some plumbers. Go get bids. No, they're licensed. And that's all we can say. We can't go all of it.
We can't
guarantee or endorse them, and we put that on the list. That's not on this thing, but on our list we say.
And we took them out of the phone book. It wasn't.
Yeah, it's just like a homeowner going in the phone book and doing it.
Yeah.
But.
Well, it isn't really. You know, to Bill's point, if we pass out a list, innocently pass out a list, and in bold red it says we don't endorse any of these, the fact that we're giving them a list says that we do.
Yeah. And the law doesn't look at it like a normal person.
And, you know, the consequences are, if there are to be any, there may be some backlash where somebody gets a bad deal or, you know, gets...
Somebody will make a mistake if there's 1,000 boxes put up. What's the probability of all of them being perfect? I mean,
yeah.
There's going to be a couple of mistakes.
But we are going to write hurt on them.
Yeah.
And we put them on notice as to what our expectations are. You have a copy of that. Some of them indicated they're not going to be involved anyway. They're really not interested in doing that kind of work. There, our list is about 20, so there are probably 15 that would be susceptible to answering the calls if a homeowner were to call them. And I, you know, the homeowner's going to say, you know, I got your name from the water company, mm-hmm. and that's what you're talking about. That's the endorsement piece.
Right. It's the consumer interpretation. Of
well, sure, and.
Interpreted it.
You know, it's like the waiver that you sign when you agree to something. It's not worth the paper it's printed on, really.
Right.
But I think in this case, we owe it to the customer because the general outreach is to the water company if they're looking for a plumber.
We're trying to avoid the do-it-yourselfer.
Well, that's
or
true.
Or the you know, the next door neighbor says, "Oh, I can do that for you," and then they go in and screw something up and
have their nephew do it.
But if you write it like, you know, if you had a discussion and you call that, you know, you've informed this particular plumber of the procedure, then you basically trained them.
Yeah, exactly.
Even on a telephone. So then if they don't follow the training procedures, then the plumber's responsible and we're not. So that's why all I think you need to do is document that you called these people, went over the procedure, and they're licensed plumbers and they understood it. That way, you have at least some documentation that you weren't negligent, or you weren't playing favors to one group of plumbers over another for a contract. Anyway, it would be our legal team.
That's a good point.
No, that's exactly where the lawyer is.
Yep, yeah, that's what he should say. But.
Yeah, and we appreciate his advice, and okay, but the reality is people are calling us, and we're not going to be rude to
him. He's got a call log. He can go back and see who he talked to and just write notes.
I already did. I sort of did that. I didn't write down.
Well, it's pretty straightforward, Dave. Well, it sounds bureaucratic. You already have this.
Mm-hmm.
So just have Lee or Carissa, you know, take your call log, list of who you called, and just below it indicate that, you know, you personally called each and every one of these, and this is the attached script.
You just send us
put it in the file.
You sent that to them too, right?
Yes.
All right. Yes. So and they acknowledged on the phone call that they understood.
Most of them are quite happy, Dave.
Well, I mean, they'll probably know it. I mean, obviously, they probably know it better than anybody, you know, once they see it.
But it's something we're going to write hurt on.
Yeah, I mean, I just maybe being a little overcautious. I wasn't.
I mean, if something did happen.
It's the little stuff.
It's there.
We're a litigious society.
Yeah. No, I know. California's the least packed. But.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, but I think it's good you call them, and that shows that you're paying attention to it. So you can, put the names on the list and send them out.
An inmate in Cochrane State Prison sued the state of California because he couldn't get crunchy peanut butter. That's a factual case.
There you go.
No. So wasn't this all driven by? Wasn't there an incident recently where the plumber pulled on the pipe and pulled off a saddle?
Well, he broke our little riser. He was trying to prepare for the hookup. The house wasn't ready for the new hookup, but he was going to put the main, though, without connecting, but go from the old box to the new. And he pulled on something, and we have such fragile parts that he broke off the riser that comes up off the main. So we had to shut the whole main down. You know, this is what we're trying to avoid.
And we ended up paying for all that, right? The plumber didn't pay for all that downtime and fixing.
Right, but it's not that. It's not. It was. If he was in there just being not trying to be careful, and this is what we consider an accident. I mean, he's unaware. That's why I'm trying. We're trying to put this out and make him aware. And if somebody is blatantly just breaking our stuff and being not caring about it, then we will take action on him. We either will fine him if he. It's not so easy to collect that kind of thing, but the owner, we can go after the owner then, which I don't really want to get into all that. Hopefully, for the most part, in the past, we've had good luck with our past projects hooking up.
So I golfed with a guy over the last week or so that's got to put in a new service line, and his interpretation was that he couldn't do it on his own. He had to pick one of the
plumbers. No.
And I said, I had never heard that. So, I mean,
he can do it on his own. He can have his cousin do it. They just have to realize that we're not our responsibility. The water company ends at the water box. So, whatever happens beyond that is between the contractor and the owner. Or whoever puts it in.
So if an owner does it, do you guys go look at it before they cover it up?
We can. We assume the professional contractor is going to put it in, right? But, you know, we'll look at them, any of them. We didn't want to go beyond the box. A professional plumber knows how to put a water line in. It's really simple.
I think I told the guy to call you.
Yeah. No, we'll come help him. We'll help him do it. You know, to the extent we can.
But well, what does that mean, though?
I mean, if he wants to know what kind of pipe to use, we can suggest.
You're not going to get on your hands and knees and, you know, put the purple stuff on the...
No.
But you'll tell him how deep to dig it and what kind of pipe and everything.
Yeah, what kind of pipe? There's several kinds, and how not to go too shallow, you know, go 18 inches or so, and not stress the pipe and those kind of things. I suppose we're taking a risk, but, you know.
Well, I think the only risk we're taking is we're giving them the PRV, right?
We're giving them a PRV, and if it doesn't work within a year, if it fails, then we'll have to replace it, but and we've had... It's a piece of equipment that can, it's not all of them are perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Anything else on the plumber's meeting? We're going to take a 5-minute break. Okay. And then we'll start. Tom will kick you off. 5 minutes.
3.
4 minutes.
It's time enough to have a smoke.
Yeah.
No, I was planning on till 1 o'clock, and I guess I just need to make. Do you think it's 1 o'clock, or we don't want to go past that?
We're going to bring lunch in, and if we're through early, you just take it with you. That's the best way I can answer that one. I think it's going to be close to 12:30. Yeah.
Okay. No, this is my first meeting. I should have asked how long I'm going to go.
Before you apply.
You're already locked in, so.
They told me sometimes they get a 2 or 3.
I exhausted all resources.
We used to meet on a monthly basis. Yeah. Someone asked the question, why do we meet every monthly? And nobody had the answer for that. So we decided to meet 6 times a year.
Is there another meeting in August?
We'll talk about that last, yeah. I think we may choose to pick up the frequency with the complexity of the contracts. Issues on contract, and If we see the need, we'll schedule one in August. So you're up top.
Okay. So I think it's on page 12. The one chart that we're going to make sure and include every time we meet is this review of the what our overall financials look like on the project. So the USDA budget allocation is $12.226 million. There's several changes here from the last time we looked at it. MC Engineering, we added in the approved Amendment 5, which was about $59,000, so they're now at a approved contract budget of $1.843 million. Mazingo contract, you can see what it started at, almost $8 million. Last year, there was approved change orders 1 through 3, about $71,000. This year, there's been change orders 4 through 7 at about $75,000, so about $145,000 in change orders. The remaining change order, what we agreed with John Pedry a few months ago was putting in a 3%, and that's the figure that shows there. In the meeting we had with John just before the long-range committee meeting on the 3rd, he's now upped it to 4%, and I'll show you that on a few charts from now. But so if the better estimate is 4% instead of 3, that's really $199,000 instead of $149,000. So that's where we stand with the engineering and the construction costs that are forecasted. Then we've got our Blue Lake Springs costs that are reimbursable. Going back to 2016 and 17, you see the different line items there. In the financials that we looked at, you see down there in 2019 purchasing meters, transmitters, and PRV regulators. So the purchases that we made that showed up in the May actuals amounted to about $83,000 of those two line items that you see there. So the total reimbursable estimate is about $541,000 for the internal costs that we're incurring that will be can be reimbursed. Interim loan costs.
Can you say reimbursed through the loan?
Yeah, through the USDA loan. Okay.
And those have been put on hold pending, you know, the bigger picture financially around the project?
Right. So you could apply this loan, but if there's not enough money in the loan, you
won't
apply it.
Right.
You'll take it out of reserves.
Yeah. The only reimbursement we received was the 2016, part of 2016 under
meter
purchase. And that was at like $127,000 minimum. Estimated interim loan interest, that I did a little more thinking and writing down of notes after I sent this out. So that $336,000 of interest was based on a completion at the end of March of next year. And it's now, even the construction guy at the June meeting stated June. So that $336,000, if you push it out to the end of June, with none of the new scope included, increases by $132,000 to $468,000. So that revised total cost there of 10.993 goes up by, it goes up to 11.125. So, and I'll make sure and get out a revised sheet.
Which then brings the under allocation amount down to, what, 900,000 roughly?
Yeah. Yeah, so, never mind. I'm looking at something else with the new scope in it. Yeah, so that's right. So down below, the Blue Lake Springs new additional scope request, we recently reviewed a July revision. The engineering estimate came out in April, and over the last couple months, we allowed them to do some more sketches and drawings that they provided to Mazingo to get a firm quote from Mazingo, and a lot's changed from that engineering estimate. And what they did, tiny bit of information for you guys that are new. We divided the new scope into three phases, and the phase one were the ones that were most critical that we wanted to put our attention on first. So that's what we allowed MC Engineering to go out and provide the engineering drawings so that they could propose firm quotes for that. So there you see parcel phase one. So phase one is now part of phase one. We had a phase one A, and now it's phase one A, B, and C. So they've divided that work into three sections. So phase one, without phase one B and C, comes out to $476,000, and the added interest would be about $100K. So the total for just doing that includes phase one A1A, and it also includes some other smaller items that to make up that 476, and with the interest 576.
So on an apples to apples comparison, Tom, so A1A previously was what amount?
Phase 1A
So these are things that our company is initiating with the construction company?
Yeah.
The changes in the phases and stuff?
This is the rub with me. It's stuff that was missed,
right,
in the initial go around, and were later, just a few months ago, discovered as needing to be included. So the cost for doing these has jumped considerably from what was originally estimated a couple months ago to what Tom is presenting now, and I'm trying for you guys that weren't here before to get that comparison, because I think it's up over $300,000 just for that one item.
Yes.
Was there a limited?
The original estimate for phase A1, that was before they divided it up. It was for the entire A1 project. Was
A1.
For construction only was $395,000.
Right.
And then another $51,000 for construction management and design.
Okay.
Yeah, and all.
So it went up about 39% or something, Tom. I can't recall.
Right. Yeah, and all of phase one was estimated at. What is that page?
That's a 395, and now it's.
Yeah. So all of phase one was estimated in April at 544,000, and now all of phase one is over a million.
So were these unforeseen, or that would be foreseen? In other words, like someone competent should have known that, or is this something that was unexpected?
As far as not including them in the original?
Yeah, in other words, you'd have a, like, yeah, the original. Because like unforeseen, you would have unlimited, but if it's foreseen, you would have a cap.
Yeah, I don't, based on conversations that I've had or been involved in with Dave and John Pedry, the engineer, they felt that that some of these areas would take us over the allocation that USDA was providing to us, so they left them out.
As it is, USDA had to make two loans, $3 million and the $9 million, because they're not allowed to make any loans over, what was it, $9-10 million or something, so we had to have two loans.
Mm-hmm.
We were worried we didn't have enough money to do everything, so we concentrated on the all the old back lot mains, getting all of those in the front. Then if there's any leftover money left over, we'd like to do some other.
So you anticipated this?
Well, it's a combination of that,
right,
and things that pop up along the way.
Yeah, I would assume a lot of things would pop up here and there.
That's going to happen.
Yeah.
And we had to make the call early on.
It was kind of rushed at the end because of the 1.8%. We wanted to get that, and USDA was telling us we had to hurry and get it in before the end of December.
Yeah, for the federal schedule.
Before the rates went up, and we did it and got that rate. So, yeah, there's a bunch of factors involved. Yeah.
So with none of the new scope, if we meet the estimates as they currently stand, we'd have about 1.1 million left below our allocation. So as we move forward, we'll see if, you know, stay with those estimates or if we blow through those estimates.
Mm-hmm.
So the phase 1A1 is something that, based on their contractual schedule for the construction, it would be something that they would want to do right after the end of the heavily populated times up here, so after September.
Right.
So they'd want to do that like in October. So that's the only kind of time crunch that we're under. So we'll need to decide as we move forward the next few months how well we're doing meeting the base contract to see if we feel comfortable enough to do that phase 1A.
But as it stands right now, if we approved A1A at $576,000,
mm-hmm,
we would then only have
$525,000
left. I'll call it in reserve.
Yeah, with still another year left.
Which, from my perspective, is
too little.
Because some of the history that Bill and Dan don't have is our engineer hasn't necessarily been particularly accurate with a lot of their numbers, and you know, this is one example where just 2 months ago we were talking about, you know, $500,000 line item to do all of phases 1, 2, and 3, and now phases 1, 2, and 3 are over, you know, $1 million in the aggregate. So it's, and there are numerous other examples of where they've missed the numbers.
Not that uncommon for consulting engineers not to do.
I have to say, though, that part of that is the work that was done to give Mozingo information to give so they can give a good firm bid. John estimated 15% over their original bid for the project. Mm-hmm. So he anticipated an increase on this A1.
Yeah.
But it was way over. I mean, they came back with it. It was the bid itself that couldn't anticipate that. But he did have a guess. And that number was wrong. Also, his drawdown, part of that was because of the winter, because the winter was longer than we thought. We thought we'd be spending more money on the project because they'd be working and we'd have a higher interest and all that, but because they didn't work that much in the winter or into the spring because we had so much rain, well, that changed those numbers. So there are other factors.
Part of the long range committee talked through this, and part of what we believe is they have more work than they can handle right now, so the bid just goes up. They'll just try and get whatever they can. Yeah. So,
just for perspective, what is the big items in this phase one addition?
Well, I don't see if I can. I don't know if the map helps, but our treatment plant pipes from the treatment plant up to a newer section area, and that's a pipe that gets the water up to tank six. Those pipes are getting old, so part of the A1 project, well, all of the A1 project was to take pipes from the treatment plant and put new ones from the plant up to a portion of Blue Lakes, so that would renew those pipes. So
it's old, but
they're old.
Know how much longer it will last? So if we delay it, it's
well. I mean, you know, we haven't had any breaks there. So well, we did have one, but in all the years we haven't. But I know that if we keep waiting and don't do anything, then eventually it's going to start failing all the time. So with our new pump station that we're putting in, we'll be able to kill that line all the way from the treatment plant over to, it's like it's on Del Rio. I mean, like that, it's not a huge distance, but it's to be able to kill that line and work on it without, you know, having people out of water. That was our plan. You know, we thought, oh, we'll get our new pump station on and we can supply tank six without using the plant. So that's kind of the A1 total project. But then there's a lot of water on Blue Lake Springs Drive, and this pipe has to cross, go down Blue Lake Springs Drive. There's springs, you know, all you guys have seen them. They run all year long. So the original pipeline was supposed to go along the edge of the road, but then we've been delaying that because we told them it's not going to dry up, but they keep thinking, oh, we'll wait till it dries up a little more. So then the idea was, okay, with this A1 project, we can kill two birds with one stone. We can put in new pipes from the treatment plant up, and also the pipe that needs to go there for the new project, you know, for services to be brought into the street, and do it all at once in a common trench. So then it gets kind of complicated, because part of the common trench is going to have a 2-inch pipe and a 6-inch pipe and a 4-inch pipe, and it changes, you know, so it got a little complicated. But putting it out into the road rather than along the edge where the spring is, even though to me it doesn't seem to matter, because if you dig down you're going to get wet water anyway, but according to the engineer, he thought it would be better to go into the road and do the common trench and add all three pipes in, and that way we're not, you know, coming back later and doing it or whatever. It's all in there, and we'll deal with the water problem now instead of doing it two times. Deal with the county's thing if they're going to try and make us pay more because we're digging in the road with this wider trench. So that's kind of what the A1 project is. So we broke it into simpler, not simpler, we broke it into sections. So the treatment plant was one, pipes from the treatment plant up to Blue Lake Springs Drive, then the pipes from Blue Lake Springs Drive, which is a common trench, up to off the road, across country line. That's more of a single pipe. So they could get bids for each thing.
So I think the merits to do it are there. The question is, can you afford it?
That's the thing.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, I don't think anybody's challenging.
And we were very disappointed by the bid. And it sounds like they don't really care if they get the job or not. We think we're saving money because they're already here. You know, they'll have the mobilization costs, but then if they're going to be so high, it's not helping us at all. We're getting close to our 12.2 million. So we're talking to Mazingo, seeing if they'll come down at all in their bid.
So Mazingo's original bid was substantially less than other bids. So the concern, general concern, I think all of the board, harbors this, is that they underbid the project.
Yeah, low ball.
So now with these change of scope requests, they're
making it back.
Trying to earn it back or make it back.
Make it up in change orders.
Yeah.
So the way we left it with John was he was going to go back to Mazingo and see if he could
get him to get revise the bid.
Some better bids in some of the sections of their bid that he highlighted. So he asked for a week or two to do that. Mm-hmm. So we need to make sure we pull some, Dave. Been a week, so in another week.
Try
to get more information on whether or not the dollars are going to stay the same or if they're going to go down at all.
Right.
I don't think they're going to go down much if they do at all.
No.
But anyway. So the next page, as new change orders come in from Mazingo from the last time we reviewed it, I just put them in here so that people can see, what additional work has been approved. So there were two change orders, 6 and 7. I don't know if you know any more on these, Dave, than I do, but 6, it's all based, looks like it's all centers around deferring site condition water mains and other underground facilities and structures not marked correctly.
Yeah, Billy takes offense at that because he feels like it's a personal thing that the pipes aren't marked correctly. Well, all we have to go by is our experience, which is if we had to repair a pipe, we'd know where it is. Mm-hmm. So in the places where we've had to repair a pipe, we pretty much know where it is and we can. We have to go out and locate it for them, for Mazingo. And he did his, I'm telling you, there's nobody to do a better job than him on trying to guess or know, where a certain pipe's going to be. Mm-hmm. Now, it turned out that because the main is not a 6-inch main, it's a 2-inch main, or maybe even a 2.5, but the main can snake. At least the way they put it in the 60s, it doesn't follow a straight line. So trying to mark something like that and know exactly where it is without any locator wire or any way to tell, this is almost impossible. Some of the maps are wrong, like I was saying earlier, that where the street, instead of going down one edge of the road, it would cross. It just suddenly crossed the road and then went up the other side. No. We don't even try and guess why, except for maybe there was a rock there. And they said, I'm not digging through that. I'll just go around it. So we ran into a lot of that where we didn't know where the pipe exactly was. They hit it. Part of the contract is for them to pothole ahead of it. And they have turned, they've tried really hard the last few months to really find these things. And sometimes it's pretty hard. To find them. But they have broken them at times, and so this is their trying to recover some of that.
Yeah.
So these change orders 6 and 7, you bake those numbers into the schedule on the prior page,
the
$75,000.
Right. Well, that's 75 is all the change orders that have occurred this year. Change orders 6 and 7.
Oh, right. Yeah.
The other change order 7 had to do with the addition of fire hydrant marker posts on 84.
Yeah, that was forgotten. We told them it was forgotten.
So what does that? What does that mean? What are the marker posts?
So we want to have posts near the hydrants that will be shown and if there's snow.
Oh, it's like the reflector posts that you see over in Plain Acres.
So the fire department can see them.
Snow poles.
If there's snow up there, you know how to get the berms along the side of them.
So they just forgot to put them in their base bid, or we forgot to tell them it was in there?
It was forgotten, I think, in the original write-up of the bid for the fire hydrants, and it was just left off.
And then booster station electrical revision.
There was some, because of the pump's warranties, they require certain electrical parts to be put on that we didn't think were necessary, but since it was under warranty, so it wasn't in the original design, and it had to do with it's like a water sensor. It says, tells the pump there's water in the pipe.
Mm-hmm.
And they require that, Gun Post requires it for their pumps, you know, to keep the warranty going. And we didn't feel we needed it because we had pressure switches on it. But you know what? Like you said, we'll just put it on anyway and make sure the warranty is going to be good. So that's pretty much what that.
Okay.
What that was.
Let's move to the next page. So last October was the last time we formally worked with John Pedry for his engineering estimate of a drawdown schedule. So I mentioned in my notes in each of these areas, it's time to get together with John and revise these drawdown schedules based on changes that have occurred and, you know, change orders that have been approved and things like that. But if you look at it, you can see there Mazingo on the construction, according to the drawdown schedule, they're way behind, even with the high dollar material item that was included. One of the things that I noticed was over the last 3 months, the plan was for like $2.4 million and they only spent $800,000. So they, based on their progress payments that were put in, so they only spent 34% of their plan for those 3 months. So anyway, it's obvious that the plan is not accurate and it needs to be revised. Same with MC Engineering. They've had, you know, change order or amendment 5 approved, so we've got extra work that they're doing there that needs to be included in their plan.
So what was their original estimate?
Who's
MC Engineering?
So,
because on the page earlier you show the total change orders for construction, but you don't show the total change order for engineering.
Yeah, well, that so that the original base contract for MC Engineering was that 1.843 minus the 58,000 for Amendment 5. Everything else was all within their, they have a what's called an additional services part of their contract. So any increase has been coming out of that.
So this is the first one where we actually changed the dollar amount.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was not clear.
So on the $1.3 million under plan, are we sure that's accurate, I guess? just want to make sure that's...
It's accurate to the plan that's in there.
Which... No, but I mean, it's, are we going to get a bill like in August for $1.3 million?
Well, this is through progress payment 9. So Sharon mentioned earlier that, or Carissa, that there was an additional payment since then. So okay. I don't have that in this yet.
Okay.
And that sounded like a pretty hefty dollar amount for that.
Do you recall the dollar amount?
It was Sharon, do you have that balance sheet I sent you? How much is it? 479?
Yeah. It was $459,115.27. So 459 is the big number you're looking at.
Okay.
So, Bill, you're touching on one of the concerns that I have, and that is, you know, unless we have accurate data on progress payments coming from Mazingo, you know, what we don't know is from the time of their actual expense for what it is, you know, labor costs as an example, equipment rental is another example, to the time we get billed for it, what is that lag time? Is it real time, which modern billing systems tend to be, or is it 90 days in arrears? It take, you know, it's a paper process that takes them a couple of months to get caught up with. Until we know where we stand with that sort of billing lag time, it's hard for us then to talk about additional change orders. You know, that phase A1A is an example. You know, do we have wiggle room to do that? You know, can we vote on it now, or is it, we're going to be hit with, you know, a $1.3 million bill here in August because, oh, they finally caught up with their actual spending rate? If any of that makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense to me. But
so is that something that you can talk to the director
yeah.
about?
Yeah, that's
right.
The primary
we've got to actually do that, right? Exactly. Figure that out.
Billing line.
Right.
Yeah, for all we know, everything's up to speed.
Okay, so for MC Engineering, they're over that plan, but the plan needs to be revised. I just got an email that I found on my computer this morning, which was their July bill, which is worked through June. So that bill amounted to, for their base contract, amounted to about $48,000. So they have roughly $336,000 remaining in their contract. Included within that bill was an additional charge. I mentioned earlier we authorized them to do the design for some of the new scope. So they had a bill for new scope of about $8,900 in May, and then another $4,800 in June. So they've spent almost $14,000 in engineering for the new scope so far. As I mentioned earlier, the interest that we've spent is a little bit under plan, just based on the amount of money that has been loaned to us so far. And as I mentioned earlier, that $336K of interest for the whole project was based on a March 2020 completion. And, you know, if we project another 3 months out to the end of June, it revises the total interest to $468,000 with no new scope added. And if you add the new scope in for just phase one, it'll add, I'm estimating, another $100K worth of interest. If you add so that's partial phase one, which was just the 1A1 and a few other minor ones. But if you add all of phase one new scope in, I think you're talking about $150K of additional interest.
So 3 months adds $130,000.
When you're out toward the end of the contract, the interest per month is over $40,000 a month.
Because of the interim financing, we didn't tell these guys about that, did we? that we had, we're being financed for the construction part of the project through a private lender at a higher interest.
Yeah, you told me that.
Yeah.
Okay. Once we get the loan.
Once we get the project complete, we'll be down to the 1.8.
That's all reimbursable, though, the interest.
Right. Okay.
Through the USDA. So the next page, there's we've got a lot of things going on that will affect our income, cash flow, and expenses. And, you know, so as we move forward, at least through the end of the USDA project, we got to really make sure that we stay focused and keep our eyes open on all those things that we're looking at and or approving that will change our income or change our expenses. So there, I have a few pages in here of some of the things we're keeping on the radar. One was a request that came to the Long Range Planning Committee to consider reducing the bare lot annual fee to make it more equitable with our overall rate structure. So you can see there the 2019 annual fee rates, and I won't read them all, but so if you look at the bare lot, there's 285 bare lots. They're currently paying $502 a year, which is 63% of a cabin with a meter. There's also what we call combined lots. There's 32 of those. Combined lots have gone through the county, and their APN has gone from two APN numbers to one. They've combined them. And there's so that there's roughly $4,000 worth of income coming in from combined lots. Those are at $126 a year.
Do you want to hear this?
Pardon?
Sharon, say that again.
Sorry.
Okay.
Just ignore me.
I'm not understanding a combined lot. So do they have any of our equipment hooked up to the combined lot?
Yes.
So why would they not pay the same as a bare lot?
Well, here, because of our, we have shareholders, everyone's a shareholder, every lot owner has a share. So if you have two lots, a lot of people have, well, not a lot, yeah, some people have two lots.
Well, then they
or
have
three
shares, right?
Then they would have two shares. We cannot eliminate a share. So then the county looks at it. When you go through the county, you abandon the, you'll abandon the easement between the two lots. So that make turns it into one lot in the county's eyes, but in the water company's eyes, it's still two shares. So there was a, well, Bob can give you some of that history, but we've had some homeowners that didn't want to pay a bare lot fee and a residence fee because they felt it was one lot.
And they'll never get the more.
Thinks,
they'll never get more service there, right?
Well, that, the idea is that because of the county regulations, you cannot build a, on a combined lot, you can only build one house.
Right.
There can't be any service to some of the lots.
So there I mean, is. There,
we run a line up to it, but the fact is you can't build on it.
Right. So there is a service box there for the lot, but we. It's not.
So 32 of the 285 are combined lots, more or less.
No, they're separate.
Well, no, but if I have a combined lot, do I pay the bare lot fee plus the 126?
No, they're totally separate.
I know, but so if I have a combined lot, I just pay $126.
Mm-hmm. Combined lot?
If I have a bare lot.
You pay a residence lot fee and
that's what I'm asking, yeah.
And 126, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So,
Bill, the matter came up when homeowners moved up here, bought two or three lots, and built a structure on two of the three,
yeah,
specifically.
Right.
And we were charging them three separate lots.
Right.
Because that's the way all the things were always done.
Right.
Until someone raised their hand and says, you know, I've got a house on A and B, I can only have one service.
Right.
And in some cases, lot C is not buildable at all.
In some cases, if it is, it's too close to the structure that's, that was built on A and B.
Yeah, but they got to surrender their share or whatever. They can't have three votes.
Yeah.
They don't pay for it.
That has less appeal than what the overall cost is to the homeowner.
Well, I mean, but, all right. So well, anything that the company has to maintain, we should, someone should pay for that, that's getting that benefit.
Granted. Yes,
so,
we do. Yeah, yes.
All right, so that's all I'm saying.
Well, the one question on top of that is that I own this piece of property, but I can't build on it.
Right.
And we say, well, we have a line going in front of you, and there's a lateral that goes to the property, and the homeowner says, well, I appreciate that, except I can't draw water, because I can't build. So they've got this whale attached.
No,
it's no good to them, and we've struggled with this.
Well, I in our long range planning committee meeting, and you can see, I think our recommendation is to drop that, eliminate that fee altogether, because you know if there's no benefit to the homeowner, you know it doesn't add any value. You know they can't build on it. You know it's one APN from the county in the tax rolls of the county. It's one lot. That's the answer to the question. Move on to the next matter as far as I'm concerned.
Now, the bare lot is different.
Yeah, the bare lot's a different deal.
Right.
Yeah.
Because so, having service there does add value. I think it goes to one of your earlier points, Bill, you know, to the value of the lot, even though the lot hasn't been built on yet or other utilities run to the lot. The water's there and it's available when somebody wants to either sell it and has
right.
to be built on. And... yeah, that's.
But it is mentioned in here that any mitigation to those fees will be picked up in the base fee. Tom, you're real clear about that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, we have to make up for the lost income somewhere.
Well, sure.
Yeah. Fortunately, for combined lots, the amount of income we would lose is pretty minimal.
Do you have, if you had it, I missed it. Do you have a recommendation for the bare lot as to if you're going to drop it, what would it be?
So I'll
wait and see.
Yeah, I got that part. Yeah.
So
till the new.
The bottom line of this whole page is we talked through this quite a bit at the long range committee meeting. And, you know, we had some dialogue through emails prior to that meeting. And we said, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe we need to consider reducing their rates, but we would want to do it over time. And as we talked through it, and we were also reviewing all the risks that we have over the next year or year and a half, we felt that we need to push that off until we get through some of these uncertainties with our finances.
Okay.
And I put in a little section there. I tried researching it online quite a bit, and I found a lot about standby charges and the fact that they are legal.
Yes.
There's no doubt about that. But what I was trying to do is look at different water companies to see what percent they charge their bare lots, but I couldn't really find anything definitive there.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
So based on all of our discussion on, you know, the unknowns that we have for the next 12 to 18 months, we felt that as far as bare lots go, we should hold off making any changes to their rate until we get to the point where we feel that our finances can handle it. Because that's, you know, that's $143,000 worth of income that we're receiving based on this year's rates.
If we eliminated everything, it'd be
right,
143,
right.
Okay. But if there's a mitigation, that number would change accordingly.
Right.
Yeah, so the general discussion, you know, in addition to what Tom said, clearly the decision was to defer a decision to the future once we've got stability in our financials. But thinking ahead to the future, we're looking at maybe around 50% of what the metered rate is.
And 50% would, based on this year's rates, would be a $29,000 decrease in income.
And would move the 502 rate down to about
down 400. Or it reduces it to one.
So instead of being
63%, yeah, it would be 50% of $799 or $400.
$400, yeah.
That's just you're thinking of what we would consider next year or year after.
Probably a year after. It's going to take some time for our stability because we haven't even talked about the reserve accounts yet that need to be funded. So that's a whole other can of worms. Mm-hmm. From a financial standpoint.
So, yeah, my thinking was that, I mean, the $7.99 that we get with the meter, that includes a base amount of water, right?
Right.
So yes, that's the base rate.
350 cubic feet per month.
Per month. I mean, in the future, we could look at what does that 350 cubic feet cost? If you bought it extra, just take that off the $7.99.
Good luck trying to figure that out, because that's in the base rate. That is the base rate.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The base rate, theoretically, is to cover all of our fixed costs.
Right.
Total fixed costs divided by the number 1,700 and some odd. Yeah.
So if you use over 350 cubic feet per month, we're going to bill them $1 a cubic foot or whatever.
$1.60. Yeah.
We're doing that now.
So I mean, we could look at it that way.
Yeah. Anyone that uses over the base rate. Not to be confused with the base.
Nobody knows how that $1.60 was determined.
That was a dartboard, huh?
Yeah.
The term base rate gets a little convoluted because there's a base rate in the building that, as Andy mentioned, is designed to cover all our expenses.
Right.
And then there's a minimum consumption rate. If they exceed that, we bill them accordingly. We're doing that now. We'll see a lot more of that in 2020 as more meters come online.
And I didn't know the answer to this, Dave, when we met with the long-range committee, but has it just been one shareholder that's complained about this?
One that actually sent, it's in the correspondence.
I saw that, but has there been any more than that
one
lady?
Not a ton of them. There's maybe a couple of made comments, but they haven't actually sent letters that I know of. Carissa might. Anybody else complain about the barrel out fee in writing to us?
Not in writing.
We hear it. You know.
We have some. Excuse me, sorry.
But not.
We have some customers that refuse to pay it, and we've liened their properties accordingly. And some of those liens go back 10 or 12 years, or maybe longer. And they're.
We end up to 8,000 plus interest.
Well, they're. You know, why should I pay for something I don't use? Shareholder, give the shareholder speech, and all, and so forth and so on. He had three lots, built on two of them, and we mitigated the exposure to change the fee a little bit for the combined lot. And then now he's got a third lot that's a bare lot. They didn't want to pay anything for it. Now, we can't shut his water off. We got a legal opinion on that for failure to pay because he is paying for his water service.
So I guess our position is stated, our recommendation as to where we feel it should go currently. So I know Dave probably wants to respond to that lady, so I think it needs to be discussed by the board to see if they accept our recommendation. Or
she asked that it be voted on, reducing the barrel off. You'll see it in there.
So we would vote today on whether or not we want to make a change, right?
Right.
With the current system.
The structure of our base rate.
Current status.
Or you could not vote, or you could say, you could do whatever you want.
But I mean, you can't vote to keep things something the same unless you have a proposal to vote against.
All right, but you defer, I guess, the vote until the LRPC makes that decision.
Well, there is a recommendation to eliminate the combined lot fee.
Right.
So we all would probably vote against that.
Well, the motion would come forward to mitigate our payment schedule.
Yeah. Well, whatever the procedure is.
All right, so I move that we, you know, eliminate the combined lot fee going forward into future fiscal years.
I second.
And this is to take effect on 1/1/20. That's me asking.
Right.
That would be my intent, yes.
Okay.
It wouldn't be retroactive.
The motion is to do away with the combined lot fee starting in 1/1/20.
Yes.
Second's okay with that?
Yes.
Okay. On the question, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Madam carries.
Nay.
And you say nay, Sharon?
I thought you hung up.
Yeah, I said nay.
Oh.
So there's one no. And five.
Okay. Tom, again, you mentioned any mitigation of anything will reflect the new base rate that we're going to on 1/1/2020.
Right.
And that should include if we anticipate any cost of doing business in the form of a rate increase, which we would put in, or do we want to have the rate increases take effect on the first of the year, calendar year, or do we want to move to a fiscal year?
I'm fine with leaving them calendar year.
Okay, so on 1/1/2020, long-range planning will come up with a recommendation for a rate increase.
Well, rate structure.
Rate structure.
Rate structure.
Rate structure for 2020.
Which would include a rate structure, which include an increase.
Well, maybe,
gotta
maybe
see
not.
What it comes, what the information says.
Yeah. Well, I caution us, we've been to the zero increases before.
Understand, but I don't necessarily want to agree to a reduction.
Oh, not now, no. I'm talking about structure.
Oh,
I'm not asking for a percentage now, no.
I don't think we know what whether it would be a reduction or how much of an increase.
Right. Correct.
Yeah, we've argued 3% since I've been on the board each year.
Correct. But when we put the new structure in place, in January of 2020, it'll include that.
I'm not going to commit to that. It could be 1%.
Well, if the base rate includes all the costs of doing business, it would have to include a rate increase. I'm asking a mechanical question here.
Typically, in past years, the Long Range Planning Committee brings forward a rate structure, and it tells you what your rates need to be to meet our expenses.
Yeah.
It doesn't recommend any increase or decrease. Usually the treasurer works with Dave and Lee, and they put together information that they bring forward to the board and discuss it with you prior to that.
Right.
That leads to a recommendation for any increase.
Yeah, 1/1/2020 is going to be some dramatic changes for us, and I just don't want this little piece to get lost. That's
yeah.
All. Okay.
What little piece?
The rate increase. If there's to be a rate increase. You know, we're going to reform on our entire billing process. And in so doing, taking care of the nuts and bolts of that, making sure all of our I's and dotted and T's are crossed. Well, I don't want the rate increase to get forgotten because it's liable to with the press of everything else that's going on.
Yeah.
All I'm saying
that'll be a board decision, and we'll show, based on the information I review with the Long Range Committee over the next month or two, it'll show what rates we will need to meet our expenses.
Got it.
And if we want to exceed our expenses by a certain amount, we can agree on an increase.
Got it.
As the board can.
Okay.
Well, and I need to remind the board that the shareholders in general are expecting a decrease because that's what you've committed or communicated.
A decrease in
rate structure?
No, the rate structure will include the loan payment. And the price of doing business, what we're committing to is that there'll no longer be part-timers supporting full-timers. Because everybody's now is going to pay for water.
Well, there will be a decrease if you, once you get your meter,
yeah,
you're going to be paying the meter rate rather than a non-meter rate. So there'll be a decrease to some.
And all that will need to be taken into the new, the new strip rate structure.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I think shareholders in general are expecting a rate decrease. Because that is what was communicated and has been communicated for the past 18 months.
Okay.
So
not that we can deliver against that. I'm just pointing out that that expectation and understanding is out there.
So we should go back and look at the actual words that were communicated.
So that
we can meet the commitment told. Right? That's what you're saying. We should make sure. If we're not going to, we need to tell them early as we can. And if we know.
I don't think we know whether we can or we can't yet.
Okay.
That's part of the problem.
Yeah. And the rate structure is going to be different starting in 2020. We'll talk a little bit about the bi-monthly billing. But so as part of the base rate, there'll be an annual fee with base rate and then the charges for the loan. So that'll all be part of the base rate, and then they'll have consumptive rates.
Yeah. We are required by USDA rules and somebody else to separate the loan payment, actually on the face of the bill, on the document. It's going to give the impression that the rate is increasing. So people are going to have to do the math.
Yeah. So if they compare the base rate line to what they're paying now, that'll be less.
Yes.
But then you add the surcharges for the loan payment, and you combine those two as a total base rate, it may be the same or it may be more. You know, so it's going to be structured differently.
Okay. And you have not come to that number yet?
Not yet.
Got it.
Yeah. So the past two or three years, we've been out of our operating budget. We've been expending more than the amount of our annual loan payment will be. So if you look at total expenses starting next year, they may not be any more than they've been over the last few years, because we've spent $600,000, $700,000 on expenses we're going to get reimbursed for next year. The loan payment's like $450,000, so a year. So,
right.
So all that's got to be taken into account as we work this out. The next page, service line replacement loans. This is something that I shot over to Dave and Lee. It was right about the time Lee was going out with her medical issue. But once she returns, I want to make sure. And have we still not received any requests?
No. Well, we have one guy said he may request the loan, but he hasn't followed through.
It was just verbal.
Just verbal, and he didn't ask for any of the
documents. Applications.
Yeah, applications, yeah. Sorry.
But in not knowing how that's going to come out, if it keeps going the way it is, it's not going to have much of an impact, but I want to set up a tracking process. Mm-hmm. Where we can see how much has been loaned out and how that money is going to be paid back, so that we can take that into account also.
Right.
New meter installations on the next page. This is going to be factored into our rate structure as we move forward. But, you know, as far as 2019 rates, you know, the base rate from a person that receives a new meter, their annual fee goes down from $873 to $799, a $74 decrease.
Decrease.
Right.
Yeah.
So when a shareholder's new meter is activated,
They're prorated the difference based on the month that it was activated. So it'd be $6.17 per month, depending on what month it's activated. The difference between the will be credited to their account and either automatically come off their consumptive rates if they use water above the 350 cubic foot per month allotment. If they don't go over the allotment on any of the months, then it'll be credited to next year's annual shareholder fees. At the start of 2019, we had 669 meters installed. You can see there over the months all the way through June 24th, the number of new meters installed, it totals 200. It brings the new total up to 869 with 842 roughly remaining. So based on the number of meters activated through June, the decrease in base rate income thus far in 2020 amounts to about $10,000. And assuming they activate about the same amount for the rest of the year, we're looking at about a $20,000 decrease in income for 2020. That's assuming no meters have usage charges. So the remaining 642 would be installed next year, and the residents' base rate will be adjusted accordingly in the next billing cycle after it's activated. So the additional reduction is estimated. I show TBD there, but I estimate 28,000. So in total, we're going to have about $48,000 less income based on the current rate structure by the new their metered rate.
They're going to meters.
All right.
Well, so when you go to a meter, you do pay less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all that will need to be taken into account.
And for the full-time homeowner up here that is paying the non-metered rate now, could only exceed that amount if they use a lot of water when they're on a meter. It would have to be the consumptive rate that exceeds.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So there is a savings.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But the question is, can we maintain that?
Well, that's why we're going through the numbers. It's one of the challenges, is that if, we're hoping the consumptive rate makes up the difference. But it doesn't sound like it's going to.
It depends what, you know, I'm going to...
We need the water hogs on here first.
Yeah, and I'm going to, you know, based on all the data we have from usage, you know, I'll come up with a recommendation or several options that I'll propose to the long-range planning committee. It'll be a, you know, two or three level, tier level for usage. And depending on what we agree to and bring forward to the board, it could, you know, it'll, in my opinion, it would definitely bring in more revenue than, well, it's currently $1.60 per 100 cubic feet. I mean, that's peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll lay it all out, we'll discuss it, and bring a recommendation forward. But
I think philosophically we have to give the Long Range Planning Committee some direction around how to look at the base rate. Does the base rate amortize 100% of our fixed costs? My point of view is it does.
That's my goal.
So assuming that would be the direction that you apply for the rate structure, the consumptive rate becomes add-on revenue, because in the base rate you're already taking care of 100% of your fixed costs.
Fixed costs. We have variable costs. In addition to the fixed cost.
That would be the amount of water we're pumping and using based on the usage, because we, and buying, because we base, we only produce as much water as we need, and we keep our reserves in the tank. It's almost like the, what you're dealing with the numbers, because That's variable because that depends on usage. If we have less usage, we're not spending as much on pumping costs and chemical costs and treatment plant operations.
So, go ahead, Dave.
Well, it's basically, you know, how do you determine the variable costs, and that's where water companies get in trouble because they put too much emphasis on the variable, and then so they're more of their operations depend on the usage, and if there's a drought or if people are conserving more, if less people come up, that income drops. So you have to be pretty tight on your operational costs, the fixed ones.
Yeah, and AWWA really warns you about putting mm-hmm. too much emphasis.
Well, there's some water companies who've gotten into trouble because they rely on the consumptive rate cash flow.
So probably a year and a half ago, Dave and Lee and I sat down, and through all our expenses, we determined which line items we thought were fixed and which we thought were variable.
Mm-hmm.
The fixed came out to 85%, and the variable came out to 15%.
Right.
Well, the question then is, the consumptive rate sufficient to cover the 15?
The example that I showed a few months ago, I gave an example of
right.
three or four tiered, mm-hmm. and through that example, it came up to the 140,000 or whatever it needed to be to cover the variable.
Because I'm going to assume that meter, no meter, people are not going to change their water use patterns. And that assumption is anywhere near correct. Those that are high water usage now are going to be paying a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not metered already, and the lion's share of the 78% or 82% of the people don't use the system at all full time, and only use 6 weeks worth a year, we could suffer an income loss.
I think you have to be, or we should be, very careful that, again, it goes to philosophy. So for that 5% that are using whatever percent of the water that you are saying, that it not be seen as punitive.
No. Well, it's going to be, because we're saying you have to pay more, and our response is you're using more. The schedule that applies to me as a part-timer will apply to the guy that's using an excessive amount of water, whether he's here full-time or part-time. And we both pay accordingly, because we're paying on the consumptive rate rather than some other type of schedule. So it's the actual use of the water that drives the number.
Yeah, we have to have a dependable position.
You're right, because we are nonprofit.
Tiered-wise.
Right, well,
we can't show that.
We have to have a basis for for the amount that we're charging for consumptive use.
Yes.
And in the past, my charts have all been based around the consumptive use is covering our variable charges. So anything above the average usage or whatever we've determined the base allotment to be has been covered through the consumptive charges.
And then you have to factor in also the reserves policy that we need. We have, we're mandated to do reserves for our USDA loan.
Right.
We're doing the asset management plan, so equipment and everything needs to be, you know, planned for, and replacement and repairs. And
so another big exercise that we need to go through as so we get into 2020. As I showed earlier, we've had a few years where we've been covering the USDA cost out of our own operating budget. So by the time we get into next year, there's about $2.2 million of costs that we are eligible to get reimbursed for. Our reserve policy shows that we were going to put aside $800,000 into reserves, so that leaves 2.2 and 800, so 1.3, 2.2 and 8,
1.4. So it leaves 1.4 of additional money that we're going to have within our bank accounts to, I mean, we got a lot of things to, that like the asset management plan and things like that, that we need to take into account with those dollars. So it's a lot to put together. You know, we want to do it over the next couple months here so that we've got a plan going into 2020.
Okay.
So, next topic was that.
Just one real quick question. Where did you come up with $799?
It's just been kind of rolling over from year to year.
The
year before that, it was 3% less.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how it was originally.
Well, I could just give you a little background on it. Before I was manager, the previous manager saw that our everything was deteriorating. He wanted to do some projects to start upgrading, which have up on the map, you can kind of see some of them. We don't have to go in and replace certain areas because it's been done in the past. So what he did the rates were increased above our operating expenses to do extra projects or
maintenance, improvements,
getting the lines from behind the homes up into the street, adding hydrants and regulators and main regulators and stuff like that. So the rates were increased above operating expenses, and as the year progressed, the money that was taken in was used to do improvement projects.
Right.
So then that continued on through right, until we got into our situation with CCWD, where they started looking at the past situation that we had with them. And decided they're not going to sell us water anymore. We owed capacity charges that they didn't feel we paid, so they cut. We were buying water from them at the time with no real agreement. It was just sort of a verbal thing through the years. And they had us a one-page written document, but we were going off of that, and so the new manager at CCWD came in and said, we're not going to sell you water anymore because you're not paying your capacity charges that you owe us from the past. So that the income that we were receiving above operating expenses went into our well search, and also to negotiate with CCWD on a good agreement to purchase water. And that's how all of these rates kind of evolved out to where it is now.
My question is real simple.
Why 799?
Yeah, why 799? Is that a dartboard? Is that a dartboard or is that a calculation?
We calculated how much would a meter user pay by adding in the consumptive fee, or calculating a consumptive fee and subtracting it from 873 at the time.
Okay.
And it was $74.
So there's a method.
Yeah, so there's a method.
But it was because no one was metered.
Right.
We started putting meters on people that were irrigating. So that fee was higher.
But that would go up over time too.
So it's kind of an evolved thing how these rates got developed.
Right. Okay.
Or undeveloped. There were 10 or 12 of them at one time.
Yeah, we had all kinds of.
Your right hand and left hand.
So this next topic is pretty interesting.
I'm sorry?
The bi-monthly.
Yeah. No, I assume we already answered that one, but.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah, so we've already decided that next year we're going to go to a bi-monthly billing and payment process, electronic. So we've had some very limited sample data on people can't be forced to go to an electronic billing and payment So we wanted to find out through the survey, and we actually offered up electronic credit card payments this year. And you can see there approximately 12% paid by credit card this year in their annual fee. Then at the annual meeting, 43 surveys came back, and you can see there the amounts that like e-statements and online billing, those that would not use either one, and so on. So based on those survey response percentages, you know, approximately 1,316 shareholders would like to use e-statements. Approximately 709 would not like to use e-statements or online bill pay. Of approximately 1,073 would use both e-statements and online bill pay. And of those, based on the surveys, 655 would pay by e-check, and 418 would pay by credit card. Again, this is very limited sample sizes. So Lee sent me some information on quotes that she received from billing document specialists and Black Mountain Software right before she went out on her medical. And so I haven't had a chance to review it in person with her and Dave to validate the way I've interpreted the quotes that she received, but the table on the next page shows my interpretation of all those fees. So there's a table. So billing document specialists is up on the top. They have one-time setup fees, and then they have per billing fees. And so the total one-time setup fees amount to $1,250. And then if so the per billing, which would be six times a year, comes to $2,149 per billing, if I interpreted things right. And that's, you can see in the comments area, it's based on getting a discount by 1,000 shareholders using e-statements. It does assume kind of worst case for the combined with payment services. That fee is based on all 2,025 or thereabouts shareholders using that service. And also the charge for address change and zip code separating, you know, that's another fee that's worst case. It's based on all shareholders. I guess billing document specialists and Black Mountain Software work together a lot. If Black Mountain Software is the software we use, the billing document specialist dollar amounts are accurate. If we didn't use Black Mountain Software, according to what Lee told me, those rates would go up a lot.
Do we know what the Black Mountain Software cost is if we want to go out and buy it?
Those are the purchase prices right there on the table. See the purchase price in that column there? So it amounts to $2,525. Well, yeah, no, that's at the end. Okay, so Black Mountain Software is $1,000 for the ACH, or the electronic checking, and e-bills $1,000. $525 for the processing interface with BDS.
One-time purchase.
Yeah, so that's the purchase price. So
okay.
$2,525. Annual fees are minimal, $200. So bottom line is the one-time charges or purchase price combined is, you know, just under $4,000, and then the annual or per billing fees amount to my estimate $2,149. So if you multiply that times six, it's $12,894 in billing fees per year. So then you go down to the notes. So the per billing fees are based on approximately 50% of the shareholders opting for e-statements and includes worst cases I talked about. The note two, the $2,894 does not include merchant fees for credit card processing, which is 2% for MasterCard and Visa, and $2.50 per electronic check. So based on those percentages I showed you on the prior page, the number of people that would pay by check, electronic check, and the number of people that would pay by credit card, you can see there that those payments, the fees on all those payments would amount to about $2,750 per payment, times six payments a year, about $16,500 per year. So $16,000 plus the $12,894 above amounts to about $29,000 of additional expenses we would incur if we were to pay, go with this plan and pay the fees of all the electronic payments.
Of course, the advantage is they process all the
yeah.
funds.
Yeah, and they showed examples of what their invoices, you know, billings would look like, and I mean they're very nice looking, and they can format them however we need to have them formatted, and it includes in there you know the links that they go to make the electronic payments and all that. So when we discuss this with the long range planning committee, you know, if we do pay the fees of the payment for the payments, that would also need to be included in the base rates.
Absolutely.
So is there a charge? So our software that contains the meter information and calculates the bill, will it read this software?
It's the same company.
Okay. So there's no, like...
Yeah, Black Mountains, we've been with them for
quite a while. Okay, so as long as we don't have to...
It's almost an extension of what we have.
Okay, no, that's fine. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I didn't know.
And we factored that in when we were looking. Were we to do this on our own, in our current, it would cost us about $12,005 a year. Because every billing costs us a little over $2,000. And then we'd have to process everything that came back to us. And of course, we can incorporate that into staff expenses, but in this, you pay about the same $12,000 fee and somebody handles it all for you.
No, I think you have less late payments on this.
Well, the same people are late every year. And it's not, Andy brought it up when we looked into it, there are 20 people on the kind of delinquency list.
Oh, yeah.
The lazy list, yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
Are locked in?
I'm sorry.
When you do that six bills a month, it's going to be...
That are late in their payments. And
my plan is, once Lee returns, sitting down with her and Dave and making sure I interpreted all this correctly, and then we'll if there's any corrections, incorporate those and bring it back to the long range committee and back to the board.
And based upon that is, we can do this a little bit later if you wish, but I'd like to get your thoughts about meeting in August, because matters like this need to be addressed.
I'm okay meeting in August. I think we should.
You're gone part of the time, I know.
I'm gone 3rd through the 11th.
Okay, well, an email will come out to you on a couple of chosen
Well, there
days.
Was already a standing date.
3rd.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah.
Let me see.
It might be better to move that out a little bit to give us more time.
Mm-hmm.
When's Lee?
So it's 3rd
of September. Expected return date for her?
She's coming in Tuesday?
Yeah, for just a couple hours.
Just for a couple hours to see how she feels. And so... Yeah, she won't be back, depending, she probably won't be back full time for another.
How's the 17th look?
That would be the only other day of the month that I could do it.
Okay.
I should
do that.
I'm fine. I think that works for me.
Dan?
Yeah, that works.
17? Okay.
Wasn't be back in school.
Let's move on that. Are you there, Sharon?
No. Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, hi. You okay for a meeting here on the 17th of August?
You know, I would probably have to phone in. I'll be there the 3rd and the 10th that school starts.
Oh, okay. Okay.
No, I won't be there, actually, but I can call in. That's fine.
Okay. You're not in Paris or something? Got it.
No, the Rolling Stones will be here, so I'll be here.
Got it. Got it. Okay.
All right, the next page, try and wrap this up. We already talked quite a bit about the USDA new scope, so this just kind of reiterates a lot of what we talked about, but... So that, as I mentioned, the preliminary engineering estimate totaled $446,000. And the total of all of phase one, so that was for A1, for all of phase one, the total engineering estimate was $544,000. And you can see the revised A1 bid there by the three areas that they divided it into. And that that A1 bid went from $446,000 to $736,000, so it went up 39%. As I mentioned, John Pedry is talking a little bit more with Mazingo to see if he can talk him down on any of the costs. The total for all of phase one came out to $1,079,000. Compared to the 544, so that went up 50%.
100%.
100%. Yeah.
A lot.
And as I mentioned, if we did the A1A and the other minor areas of phase one, it would total 500 or 475 plus 100 interest, so 575 total. Anyway, I think waiting for John to come back to us over the next week or so, and we'll go from there. Yeah. Okay. Asset management plan. The dates up there show what Mark Carey provided to us in an email on May 29th. Discussed it with the Long Range Planning Committee, and based on our discussions, we approved them to proceed forward with the working toward a completed draft report and review that with us. And so we gave them that okay to proceed on June 11th, which was a couple weeks after we received his date. So. Understand that his dates would move out a little bit. So anyway, this just says, you know, what we have in front of us as far as working on to get to the final asset management plan. So based on another email received from Mark Carey, he was asking about possibly getting together the week of July 22nd to review the draft report. So I talked to John Pedry on the phone yesterday. It sounds like he's still a couple weeks away from getting to the point of checking all of the numbers. We provided him feedback on a lot of the life expectancy dates. And so for, like, instance, the main lines, he's changing that from 75 years to 90, I believe. So he's working on all those numbers to revise that. I'll have to go through that big table again and figure out what that really amounts to, and how much we would need to account for in 5 years, 10 years, and so forth. So, and he's also working on the write-up. So, so sometime, probably in a couple of weeks, we're going to schedule a meeting. I told him I wanted the long-range committee there.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll need some advance warning on that, so that we'll see if it fits with enough of the long-range committee being available. So, and the, so far, their budget for this is around $45,000. They've spent $36,600, so they got about $8,500 left in their long-range budget, or their asset management plan budget. That's also based on an invoice I just received yesterday.
So this is just a tool to better manage your assets. It's not really going to affect the rates or anything.
Well, it could. It's gonna tell us how much we think we need to set aside over a 5-year period, 10-year period, 25-year period, to handle asset replenishment,
right.
Maintenance, and
instead
all
of just going by,
instead of winging it and having to have
something break.
But I mean, are you hoping to use this to come up with the rates for 2020? Are you in a hurry to get this so you can?
Yeah, it needs to be taken into account. How much we already have a good start based on the amount of money that I mentioned that we're going to get reimbursed. If we have, you know, $1.4 million, that's, if we fund a reserve policy at $800K and have a $1.4 million still in the bank, we can, you know, possibly use some of that to start the funding for the asset management plan. But that'll be just, I'll get data on the table and mm-hmm. talk through it and figure out what we want.
Well, I think what it does, as far as rate is concerned, probably not a lot in the short term, but over the long term, it is a planning tool.
That's what I'm asking. It just seems like by the time we get this and everything, I don't know if we can really use the information.
I would see a de minimis impact on 2020.
Yeah, 2020.
Going forward, yeah, we can use it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, he wants to replace 5 trucks and, you know, there's a 5-year amortization schedule and or depreciation schedule, and we have to take that all into account next year, but
but
I don't think that's going to happen.
You know, the reserves policy, if you read through it, you know, it covers things like the generator, you know, things that come up that we didn't know about.
Right.
Asset management plan, if you look at the table that I built based on the data he originally gave me, you know, over the first 10 or 15 years, we don't really have to set that much aside because we're putting all new materials in right now on a majority of our infrastructure. So the majority of the high dollar amounts that would you would need are out many years. And, you know, one of the options that you could consider is, you know, if everything is out beyond 40 years, our loans paid off, and you just go out and get a new loan. So, anyway, all that would have to be discussed.
There is a very slim remote option that USDA will forgive the loan. They do that.
$12 million
Yeah, they'll forgive it. I wouldn't anticipate it'll happen right away. But.
And so who's in the White House?
Yeah. There's anybody there left. Anything else? Tom?
No, that's it. Well, there's nobody there now.
That's a question of luck right now.
Well, yeah.
Is there anybody there?
Oh, the butler. The butler's still there. Thanks, Tom.
That's so sure.
Yeah. Tom, thank you very much.
You're welcome. I've read for
Tom. Well, that took a lot of work, Tom. Thanks.
Is there any other unfinished business come for the board? Hearing none, new business correspondence. We have a couple email correspondence that have come in. One is has to do with doing away with the lot fee. And with your indulgence, Dave and I'll answer that one. Second one is a second correspondence we got from a family up on somewhere
Quan Kuhn.
Complaining about the way that the activity was carried out, and Dave took it upon himself to go up and meet and speak with the people, and which I think always bears fruit. And we got an email back about a month or a week later. I want to thank you for the correspondence. Crew came out within a day or so, did the best they can to clean everything up. Really appreciate their efforts, and looking forward to having everything paid before the winter. So,
so is she totally happy, or is she more than?
They're very happy.
They're happy, but they're not. You know, they're waiting to see how the paving is going to turn out. They wanted us to pave the whole
street,
court, and because it is a court and not a main thoroughfare, the county has no plans to pave it in the foreseeable future. So we're not going to do that, but we will do our proper diligence to satisfy the county's specs. Okay, and I hope that's enough, I swear then.
The wall behind the fire hydrant.
That, we'll look at that some more to see what we need to do there.
I drove by it this morning, it's only half much dirt, it's kind of ridiculous. But
it's not, you know, yeah, but we'll see. The county has specs too on behind the hydrant.
You can't just go to the lumber yard up here and buy garden block?
We could.
Probably could.
So that's one thing we're looking at.
So it's kind of work in process.
You yes.
talked to her.
But for the most part, she's happy with the response she got.
I talked to the husband. It turns out we'd gone to school together. Small world.
Oh, geez.
But that aside, he couldn't say enough. We didn't expect to get this kind of service.
Oh, that's good.
You know, I think if you live in the Bay Area, you can certainly understand why. Unless it's PG&E and they want to be everybody's friend at the moment. Speaking of PG&E, item B is a generator, and Dave will bring us up to speed on why we need a generator. In fact, if you're in the business of trying to buy one, you better hurry, because the inventory is going down to about nothing. After PG&E announced of rolling blackouts. So give us good news.
Well, I'd like to see us speed up the rest of this meeting.
Okay.
Yeah, we had a discussion about it earlier.
Right. And I have a write up on the generator that everybody has, and I sent out earlier too on an email to the board.
Well, I'm not an engineer, so like if you tell me it's the right size and it'll work.
Yeah.
I'll have to take your word for it.
Well, we had an electrician look at it, not just me. And he is an electrician that works, that was very familiar with our well controls, which is, I wanted to make sure we had a generator that can run. A 50 horsepower pump starts up, it uses a lot of power right off the bat in it. So I wanted to make sure we could have that startup power that we would have, and also run the control building, which is a few. Our SCADA controls, minor draw of electricity, but I wanted to make sure it was right. He said the generator that I selected would work for us. And
is that the one that the company recommended also? You gave them the loads and the motor, and they said this is the size you need?
Yep.
So basically, supplier size, your electrician had verified that it's acceptable?
Yes.
If it's anything, it's bigger than we need,
yeah,
which is fine.
Which you want it to be.
Yeah.
What about, so it's going to be on a trailer, and you're going to haul it out there when you need it?
Yes.
So where's the trailer? Where's it going to be stored?
It'll be at the treatment plant, which is down in Blue Lake Springs. The wells are out at White Pines.
So what power does it run on?
It's a 125 kVA.
But what is the generator?
Like, is it diesel?
Propane?
Diesel.
Diesel?
Okay. And then it'll fit where it has to fit, right?
Yeah, it will. We'll have a, that's another reason. I'm asking for the price of the generator plus a little extra money
for the connection to the control building. We already have a transfer switch in the control building for a, in the past we planned on renting a generator and, you know, having it brought up and then using it if we needed it. But it, all it is a hole in the wall with the three wires coming out, and we can't have that. So we need to have a plug on the side that's locked that we can go into and plug in. You know, that's going to have to be done by our electrician. So yeah, I'm asking for a little bit more than that.
Does somebody have to sit with it, or is it tamper-proof? Or?
Well, it's pretty much tamper-proof.
So you'll test it once a month or something?
Yeah, well, we'll have a maintenance schedule on it. Plus, we have a company, Energy Systems, out of Stockton, who takes care of our generator at the treatment plant. We'll have them come in and make sure it works right, and we'll run it ourselves, of course, every month to make sure it's ready to go.
And how long is the gas above storage for? Have you figured that out?
The diesel.
Diesel.
Diesel storage.
We have a tank at our treatment plant.
I know, but are you gonna have to run that out there every 2 hours and replenish
the tank? No, I don't remember the exact hours, but it will run a long time on
24 or 48 hours or something like that.
Yeah.
And you have a truck that has diesel on it that you can just go refill it?
We can do, well, we don't have a tank, but we have a tank at the plant. We can purchase a tank and drive it out there to fill it. We have a pump.
So, on what page is this? It's not saying. Yeah, there's maximum fuel flow per gallon, or per hour is 19 gallons. Fuel tank capacity is 169, so you get
8 or 9 hours.
Yeah, 10 plus hours depending upon demand.
Yeah, but then if you look down fuel below, well, at full load it would take 7.3 gallons per hour. So it's still.
Yeah, so in the 16 is 25 hours, almost 30 hours.
All of our employees are going to, all the field employees will get a tune-up on the operation of this thing. And we'll also develop a protocol on when it's deployed, and what's to be taken, how many times does this thing get checked on.
Right.
As Dave mentioned, we already have a service that comes up, looks at our big generator, we have at our treatment plant. They can turn around and look at the other one at the same time. Won't do us any good if the fuel, if the diesel is separated.
I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No, it's, we're going to have
a late. So can you start it remotely?
No.
You have to be there.
You have to be there.
Okay.
Well, yeah, you can start remote. This one doesn't have the capacity, and I'm sure there's a way to do that.
No, I'm just thinking if you have to do it from your computer or something like that.
Well, I'm sure there's an
app. No, but if you don't feel like you need to do that, then we don't need to do that. Yeah.
Well, you know, for some years we've talked about getting one or borrowing one. We've had one on sort of retainer for a number of years.
Yeah.
Never had to make the call for it, but I can tell you that the whole system is going away because of the demand for generators right now, with PG&E saying,
yeah,
you know, hang on to your trousers, guess what's coming. And this is purely something very akin to the first aid kit that every business office has that's on the wall.
Sure.
You know, never gets used, but God, if you need to have the need, you know, you're glad you have it.
So if the power goes up, the generator goes on automatically, doesn't it?
No.
But doesn't,
no. No, because we don't want that. Because the power could go off at any time for a tree fall on a line. We don't want the thing starting unless we want it to.
So you want the operator to be there to start the well and start the generator?
Yeah, yeah, there has to be, because we have an integral part of it to wells are operated by radio control.
Right.
Yeah, so you'd have to have a truck go out to the treatment plan, hook up the trailer, drag it out here to the
well.
The wells, connect the switch, fire it up, monitor the fuel levels.
Yes.
And if it needs more diesel, you have to disconnect it, drive it back to...
No, we...
Or you could bring it down here to Chevron.
Well, we can take it over here, too. That's fast. In the last fire we had, the whole town was evacuated. That was the old Gulch fire. I don't know if any of you guys were here then, but... Ebbets Pass stayed there and provided fuel to the fire trucks and everybody that needed it. Our trucks, too.
So this is a used one?
Yes.
How old a system?
Oh, shoot.
How many hours are on it?
It's got 15,000 hours. That's about 649 days of use.
That sounds like a lot.
For a generator, I don't think it's a lot. It's used, but there's some advantages to that, too, because all the bugs have been worked out of it by use.
What's the cost on a new one?
Over 80,000. And then the times that we'll probably use it are not going to be that many. PG&E is talking about shutting power off if there's fire danger. That's one scenario. They're saying 3 days, so if I assume 5 days just to be safe, we may use it then. I don't see them going over that if there's only fire danger, because the wind events don't last. They use a number of factors to determine when they're going to shut it off. And it's quite a process to turn it back on. It's easy to turn off, but they have to go and inspect lines and things, so.
It's supposed to walk every line.
The time consuming part.
Yeah. So, but if, on the worst case scenario to me is if there's a fire that's near Arnold, they could shut it off for as long as they need to, because they don't want, they don't want the PG&E lines causing problems when there's a fire close by. So I could see it being off for a week or maybe longer. That's when we'd use it.
I was in a forum Thursday where PG&E spoke about shutting off power, and they were very forthcoming about things are going to change. He listed all the factors they take into consideration. It's like a formula. And once the needle goes past like number 4 on their list of 5, the power goes out. And it goes by grid. And they're going to go beyond the closer grids to where the fire is. They certainly don't want a repeat of anything that's occurred in the last 2 years. And you can certainly understand why. Once they shut the power off, and when they go to shut it on, they start with the big power towers, inspect those by helicopter, and then they inspect everything on the ground right up to the pole across the street from your house, then they turn it back on. I asked them about the media portraying that the average downtime will be 5 days. And he says, no. He says, we're anticipating 48 hours. He says, however, there was just a fire up in Northern California, I think in Yolo County, where there was a dramatic wind change, and they had to extend their blackout. He says, this is going to be a fact of life. And the legislature, of course, is spinning itself, writing new rules about where PG&E can put lines and covering the tower wires with plastic, and it's going to be an interesting road ahead of us. Best thing we do is get a generator and put it on a trailer, and if we need it, it's there, and if we don't, good for us.
Mm-hmm. Why spend the money on a new one when hopefully we'll never have to use it, right?
Well, to this point, we've done just that. We haven't spent anything, and hopefully we won't need it.
Right.
I think the tide's shifted a little bit. I've always been a fan of having one. I think we should have one anyway. Whether this is used at 15,000 hours, I don't pretend to be a diesel motor, because I know diesel motors are gauged on hours and not age. But it seems to be healthy. The price seems to be competitive. and for our need.
Okay. No, I think you make good points. I mean, the maintenance on the diesel engine, I mean, it's going to last 30 years.
So you would be buying it from United Rentals?
Mm-hmm.
Have we had another third party look at the generator and assess the... So I think in blocks of 40-hour weeks, it's, you know, work weeks. So there's 2,080 hours in a year, so this could be a 7-year-old generator or even longer, depending on how it's been used and how it's been deployed.
It's built in 2011.
Okay, so 8 years. That's pretty close by my math. So, you know, has Tom over here at, you know, at Arnold Automotive inspected it? And not that it's necessarily Tom, but, you know, is it just you looking at it and saying, yeah, this looks fine to me? Or
well,
has anyone looked at the maintenance? I just don't want to buy a pig in the poke. You know, you spend $25,000 and the first time the power goes out, it won't start.
Well,
where it runs for 20 hours and then craps out.
We're going to get a warranty on it. And we're going to go out, take it out there, and we're going to do a full test, which is under load. Run the SCADA, make sure the SCADA works. Everything works. And that'll be under covered under that warranty, which is not very long, but it's 3 months, but it's plenty of time for us to test it and make sure it's going to work. As far as life expectancy, I had to go with our electrician on that one. He seemed to think it was a good unit, so I didn't bring a diesel mechanic in to know for sure. It's a Isuzu Japanese motor.
Well, I think the only thing you can do is get the people that you consider to be the experts to look at it and kind of go with their opinion. But other than that, I don't know what else to do.
Is it, would it be easy to get a diesel mechanic to look at it and for $100 or a couple $100 and tell us whether or not he sees anything major?
So who's the people that service your existing one? Would they, one of their guys, be able to look at it?
They can come up and look at it, but we got to, you know.
We got to pay.
Well, you're going to test it, right?
We're going to test it, right. And we're going to have it under warranty so that if something does go wrong.
But you're going to test it after you buy it.
Yes.
They're not going to run it out here and let you test it until you write them a check for 25 grand.
Yep.
We can access their maintenance records, though.
You would be buying that, yeah.
Well, it's a company like Avis or
yeah.
Alamo. You know, they're in the generator business.
This is one that United Rentals has used. Passed, now they're selling off their old stock.
And they're going to stop doing it, according to their sales rep, because too many, everybody's buying them.
Are they the original owner of it?
I don't know that. I'd have to ask. It's one of their rental units. I assume they that, but I don't know it.
I would just suggest that when we do that 3-month test and bring up people that did servicing and have them look at it and make sure that they think it's good running the machine.
Well, we're going to take a chance on anything we buy.
Yeah.
All we try is to do is mitigate it. I don't.
Well, there's a huge difference between, you know, a 12-month warranty and a 3-month warranty. You know,
well,
bring it out here and test
used,
it.
Sure.
And it passes the test, but it only has a 3-month warranty. A year from now, if you go to use it and it doesn't work, then you're shit out of luck, I guess. I don't know. I don't want to try to micromanage it, but you know, a 15,000-hour generator
is that a lot? I mean, if you're in that business, I don't know if that's a lot or a little bit.
I don't either. Other than, you know, using my formula, it's 7 years old. You know, and you know, is it like the little old car from Pasadena, or the or has it been? Was it in New Orleans during the flood? And they brought it out here and rehabbed it, and you've got cylinders that have been filled with sea. I don't know.
Let's move on.
It also.
So,
I want to go home.
What's written in the warranty makes a difference too.
But it's only a 3-month warranty.
I know, but I mean, even though it's 3 months, the wording in there may not allow you to
get your money back if certain things aren't covered.
Well, I think there's going to be a shortage of new ones, and I think it's a reasonable risk to buy used.
Yeah.
So these generators, I specified these before. These generators, they're installed in places like this, and they sit there for years and years. And they have a service life. I mean, most islands have a diesel generator that powers the island. So diesel generators are built to sit there.
Oh, the hospitals have it.
Yeah. So the biggest diesel engine I ever saw was in Orange River in South Africa. They have a dam that the French built, and they have a backup diesel generator, and they start it once a week or once a month. They run it for 24 hours, and they do it all remotely in France.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
but
this thing was built like 30 years ago.
Probably filled the room.
Huh?
Probably filled this room.
Oh, it was huge. I mean, yeah. It's one of the biggest dams in South Africa.
Well, Dave needs either conditional approval to move on this.
I'll move for conditional approval.
Move to purchase?
Yes.
I second. So just one quick thing. You might want to consider having a plug put in that the new pump station too. Someday you may need to use it there.
Yes, that's what we have a plug.
Okay.
Set up being put in there.
So if you ever needed this at the new pump station, you could use it?
Yes.
Okay.
On the question, Sharon, you were trying to get in the conversation.
Oh, you know, I was just doing some research online, and one of the websites that, you know, obviously wants you to buy a used generator said a standby generator can last from 10,000 to 30,000 hours. Because they don't get operated very often, and you just, you know, you do your monthly maintenance. So, you know, it may be a good deal if we're only halfway through the hours. Mm-hmm. That's all.
Good point.
Okay. Andy, a motion has been made and seconded to go ahead with the purchase.
Okay.
On the question, all those that are in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Thank you. Those opposed say nay. Any abstentions? Thank you. This concludes, or no. Pardon me. One more item on action items. Carissa, we have a copy of that.
As far as we had said, there was nothing new. Everything was in progress and has been addressed.
Okay.
She was comfortable with what we had so far.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn to retire to executive session.
Second.
You're so tired, you're stuttering.
I am. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Retired.
My brain's hung up on these.
Okay.
I need a motion to move to executive session.
I so move.
Okay.
I'll second it.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Thank you. Carissa, we're going to have to ask you to leave here. You can leave all your stuff there.
I have to leave too, right?
Can we break for lunch? Or get lunch during the meeting?
I was just going to say that, yeah. I'm trying to be sensitive.